It's Seven Land Hand! Brought to you by Good Game St. James! Khans of Tarkir! It's the most surprising set release since Janet Jackson's 2004 Super Bowl performance. With a disdainful stroke, we're going to let go a blinding spray. Hopefully enough to feed the clan. It's a leap. Is a leaping master, beta, then a swift kick in the Alpine Grizzlies? If you awaken the bear and become immense, have you got a Ghostfire Blade or more of a Monastery Swift Spear? We'll have tips like don't throttle your ride of the serpent, or you may aggravate your molting snake skin and end up needing to consult the sage of the inward eye. We hope to finish with a bit of quiet contemplation and then send out the Salt Road Patrol to clean it all up. Sark on this! And more of the usual shit on today's Seven Land Hand.
My God. Every penis joke under the sun.
Hey, also, look at this. It's not. It is. It's Master of the Pearl Necklace, Aaron Graham.
Thank you. Wow, that's really nice. I take them or I give them?
Take.
Oh.
Yeah. And Alabaster Kieran de Vries Donnell.
Alabaster Kieran.
Yeah, Alabaster Kieran. It had to be done eventually, didn't it?
Yeah.
It was obvious.
We knew.
It was the obvious one. Yeah. Alabaster
Creature
Kieran.
Which type? Kieran.
Not Kieran.
I'm okay with that.
You haven't said anything.
I'm okay
yet.
With that.
Kieran is dead.
Kieran died.
Kieran.
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 Alabaster Kieran.
Kieran DVT. Are you, gentlemen, you've been well and truly introduced. Welcome to the clan of Seven Land Hand.
Mm.
How are we?
What's our clan called? Seven Land clan. Hand Clan.
Seven Land Hand Clan. Oh, shit.
Oh, no.
What colors are we? I feel like this is a more important question.
All the colors.
Pink?
Yeah, pink.
Pink, purple, and
pink,
green.
Pink, I have black hair. Yeah. You guys have different coloured hair to me.
Well, he's alabaster, blonde. So he's definitely white.
Alabaster. Yeah. Alabaster Kian. Oh. I'm doing well, doing well. How are you?
Yeah.
How are you?
You've been drafting the shit out of life.
Yeah, and Khans of Tarkir as well.
Yeah, of course.
It's been all right.
Drafting the shit out of Khans of Tarkir, did you just take all the bears? You were just like, oh man, just take a bear.
No, drafting the bejesus out of it then.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
All right, well, if we're going to find out how to do this bloody set, might as well bust a booster.
A booster. Wow, that is exciting.
Here it is. Here's the Buster Booster, or Booster to be Busted.
Yeah, for everyone on the podcast, just inhale deeply. This is the new smell.
Like that belongs to somebody else.
Is this the first Khans packet you've opened?
Yeah, this is the first Khans packet I've ever
touched. This is exciting.
Touched.
Do you know what I opened in my first Khans packet?
What did you open?
A foil flooded strand. That's $100 in Star City for the blue Fetchland.
Flooded strand.
Yeah. Oh, you missed that one in your intro, didn't you?
That would have been good.
Flooded strands of
jizz.
Have you seen the picture on Disdainful Stroke and on the spray, blinding spray, both look like just white liquid being poked in someone's eyes.
Maybe that's where I got the idea. Yeah, I went for a bit of a wanking theme.
For those of you
playing at home. It was
God
a
forbid.
Theme of masturbation. Yeah, so it was like the leaping master beta.
You
go, yeah.
Blinding
good
spray.
Good times. All right, hey, look, I've busted a booster.
Oh, yeah, cool. Ready? Here we go.
Okay, guys.
So what we're going to take out of this booster in a draft?
Yeah, what we're getting, if we're drafting right now, and this is our first pack, which one are we keeping? This is completely the original idea that we've
Fetchland.
Done. It's called Buster Booster.
Fetchlands are good.
All right.
They fix your mana.
I've got a Sage Eye Harrier. He's a 4 and a white. This is the first card I've ever seen. You're already shaking your head.
No.
He's a creature.
He's okay.
Bird warrior. He's always 1 power for 5 and 5 toughness. He's a 1/5 for 5 mana. Mm. He's got flying and he's got morph for 3 and a white.
So morph means that you can cast any morph creature. It's always got the same text with a different cost. You can always play it as a face down creature, which is always a 2/2 with no name, no abilities. It's just a 2/2. So you pay 3 mana, you get a 2/2 face down, and you can flip it up at any time for its morph cost. So in this case, it's 3 and a white, is it?
Yeah, 3 and a white. So that's like an instant sort of chump blocker, because for 3 mana, he's not going to be... not going to make any difference. And he just ends up being a bigger wall if he comes down.
And you can just attack him for 2 until they block it, and then you flip it into a 1/5.
Trade.
Yeah.
Yeah, this guy is going to trade for a lot of morph creatures along your time, and you know when you need a flying blocker or you need to get in for that extra damage in the air, he can do that.
Mm-hmm.
He's a solid man, but not exciting.
Yeah, not great. Exciting. Something I have experienced so far is that 5 toughness creatures block everything that you need them to block,
except for Woolly Loxodon.
Except for 5/5
big stuff.
Yeah, Woolly Loxodon and stuff. But you want them to cost a little less than this. Is a bunch
five
of...
5 for a 1-5 of flying.
Like, you don't want to be paying 5 for a 1-5, and you don't want to be paying 4 to flip it up, like, as a surprise. It's just a 1-5, like, whatever.
So to cast it out for morph, you pay 4.
And you pay
goes,
3.
You pay 3, and it goes colorless. Face down.
Yep.
And then to flip it, you pay an additional 4, so then you played 7 for your 1-5.
Yes.
Five.
Yeah.
But oh dear. It is in installments. And yeah. every card apart from one cycle requires extra mana on top of it. Some of them can morph by revealing a card from your hand. But all the ones at common and rare you need to pay extra mana for them. But generally they're worth it because you have a 2/2 for a few turns. Later, when you've got some mana lying around, you can flip it up.
Okay, so he's going on the... he's not going to make it, is he? That's our first pick.
Not a first pick.
All right. Crippling Chill. He's 2 and a blue for an instant. Tap target creature. It doesn't untap during its controller's next untap step. Draw a card. We know this card, don't we, from before?
Yeah. Last time this was in M14, I think.
No way. Yeah, I would have remembered this card.
Not as Crippling Chill. It just tap target creature. It doesn't untap during its controller. It's like...
it did not have cantrip.
What's the crusty one? Is it? It's not uncrust.
Encrust. That's an enchantment.
This is instant.
Oh, has this card existed? I'm not sure this card's existed before. Yeah, with the cantrip. The fact that you draw a card off it means that it's never going to be dead. Really, you want it to come down later when they've got a crucial attack coming or a crucial block that's going to stop them from getting killed, and you tap that guy down. What's pretty much for 2 turns. And
this card has been in Avacyn Restored.
Avacyn Restored. I knew I'd seen it before somewhere. I could think of the artwork.
Yeah, this card is really good. I've really enjoyed it, and I've drafted with it a few times. It's just been a solid man. It's been, you know, it's been great, and it's done exactly what you need it to. This card is. It comes down. It exists, and it wins you the game in 2 turns. So this is the card that you can engineer a board state that, you know, they untap. You're like, okay, tap your guy, draw a card. Next turn, I get in with these guys. You untap. This one doesn't untap. I get in with these guys. You're dead.
Yeah. It's like it really swings a race in your favor because you're attacking with 3 creatures. They're attacking with 3 creatures. They go to attack and you tap one of their guys down. Now they can't even block with it. They've got to like reevaluate what they're attacking with because now they can't race you as efficiently. So
yeah.
It's good. And the fact that it triggers prowess at instant speed and it draws you a card. All good things.
So it's a sort of card. I mean, it's instant, so you play it in their go. But can you play it late in your go just to tap things out they're not going to... Yeah, that's nothing shameful about doing that.
No, nothing. You tap down a crucial block. It still won't untap for a turn, so you got 2 attacks out of it.
So you can punch a hole in their defenses during your own
turn. First and then it won't untap in their next turn. You still get another attack past that guy.
And if you have a bunch of prowess guys, you know, like you could conceivably be getting 3 additional power from this one spell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's entirely reasonable. You know, that Jeskai Windscout, a card I've had multiples of in a couple of decks.
It's a 2/1 with flying and prowess. So whenever you cast a non-creature, gets +1/+1. You need stuff like this just to get him in because you're just attacking for 3 to 4 a turn.
So here's a good utility card. You'd be hoping he'd come around if he ended up getting a strong blue card.
You want to pick him up like fourth pick onwards, but again, not powerful enough. More powerful than the first card, but still not first pickable, really.
All right. Third up, we have Sultai Scavenger. He's a 6 cost, 5 and a swamp for a 3/3. He's got Delve. Each card you exile from your graveyard while casting a spell pays for a colorless mana, and he's got Flying as well. So he's a Flying 3/3, which you can get out for... How many cards have you got in your graveyard?
Yeah, exactly. So if you've got 5 cards in your graveyard, you pay 1 black.
You play 1 swamp and for this guy. Go.
Maybe cast another spell that turn.
He's a creature bird warrior. Yeah.
Oh, he's not a zombie?
No, he's a bird warrior.
Oh, I thought he would have been a zombie bird with the Delve.
He feasts on zombies.
Oh, I see. Yeah, Sultai Scavenger. Yeah. I've played it in a couple of my draft decks so far. Just very impressive. I'll pay 4 to 5 to 6 mana for a 3/3 of flying. I've done worse. In M15, we played Cap Show Kite Fins, which was a 3/3 flyer in blue, and it had a tap ability, but it wasn't a permanent tap ability, so it was just kind of gravy on that 3/3 flyer. With this one, the fact that you can just get it down for 1 mana and cast another spell later in the game is pretty good.
And there's a surprising amount of draw cards in this set. You know, they're on a bunch of the commons and uncommons. There's the 4 mana draw 2, there's the 8 mana draw 3 with Delve, you know. So like a lot of people are like, oh, you know, when I get to 6 mana, I won't have anything in my hand, so what's the point? But you know, if you play Crippling Chill, draw this card, you're like, oh, sweet. Now I get to play my dude and I only have six lands.
Oh, yeah.
My personal favorite thing I've done with this card so far is on turn six, with six lands in play, I played two of them. Because I had six cards in my graveyard, and suddenly I had 2 3-3 flyers, and my opponent was like, well, bollocks.
Yeah.
And I was like, you dead.
So if you spell heavy, then Delve is a pretty good line to
Delve's
go,
Delve's going to be fueled by you being spell heavy.
Yeah.
But Delve is in the blue-black-green clan, the Sultai, and so putting a crippling chill or that sort of stuff into your deck is going to both have utility for tapping down the creatures and fuel your later Delve cards as well. Mm. So.
And is there a lot to deal with flyers in this set?
Not heaps. There's
not as much.
There's Windstorm at Uncommon, which deals X damage to each creature with flying. There's a few Reach guys, but none of the Reach guys can kill this 3-3. 3-3 is a...
The Outlast guy can. The Outlast guy can get bigger.
Yeah, Outlast guy can get pretty large.
Yeah, he's a 4-mana 2/3 with one green tap it, put a 1/1 counter on it.
He's a 3/3 for 3 and a green.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right, he's better than I thought.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
So Sultai Scavenger, he's not going to be a first pick, but where would he go?
I like it better than the first two cards.
The first two cards.
They've been gradually impressive.
I did actually first pick this card.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It keeps your colors open as well.
Yeah.
So this way you can be in one of, three different clans. Because any one of those three clans can play it. You don't need to be the Delve-based clan to be able to play him. He goes in aggressive decks because you burn your aggressive guys early. Then you follow it up with a good flyer, exiling those early aggressive guys from your graveyard. And he goes in black, white, green, which is the long game one. Again, you just need evasive threats to kill him with. So he goes in any deck. You just keep your options open by picking him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the 6 mana initially when you look at it isn't too bad because the Delve option's there.
Yeah.
All right, next up we have a ridiculous-looking card called Hooting Mandrills, which is another 6 cost, but 5 and a forest for a creature ape. He's a 4-4, and he's got Delve as well, but he comes with Trample instead of flying. So essentially, it's the same card for one extra power and toughness.
And
with
trample instead of flying.
Yeah.
Still a really solid guy. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not going to be unhappy that he's in your deck. I know a couple of people have been like, he'll see playing Staten. And I'm like, no.
No, he won't.
he's a solid man for limited. The keyword trample is evasion-ish because it's always going to get him for some damage if it's chump blocked or, it forces them to not be able to just block with their 1/1 that they might generate off, the 5-mana instant make 3 guys spell or whatever. So he does have some extra utility, but flying is always better than trample. Mm. And, Sultai Scavenger is just that little bit
especially
better.
Especially trample with only 4/4 as well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if we played, I'm sure, like on a rough day for drafting, would you play a 6-cost 4/4 with trample?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I would.
Yes.
So this guy can come in cheaper than that.
Yeah, exactly. So later on in the game, again, it's a lot of drafts come down to who can get stuff onto the board quicker. Mm. And if you're paying this and another spell on your turn 6 or something, say, you're going to be ahead of your opponent that's only been casting one spell a turn. So Delve enables those kind of starts that are just difficult to recover from, even if it is just a 4/4 with trample.
Man, Delve, I'm already liking the look at Delve.
Yeah.
And not to be forgotten about, 4/4 triggers Ferocious.
Also very important, the blue-red-green clan, Ferocious, all their spells trigger if you control a creature with power 4 or greater. So that's a reason to pick it in the red-blue-green clan.
Wow, they have an additional effect or something similar.
So is he going in the Sultai Scavenger?
He's on the same level as Sultai Scavenger, I think.
I would probably pick Gripping Chill over Hooting Mandrills. Like, if we were looking at Hooting Mandrills, Gripping Chill, Sage Eye Hawk as the only cards you've got because you're playing Hearthstone I would probably pick Gripping Chill.
Gripping Chill. Yeah, okay, interesting.
Yeah.
I think I'd probably just take the Mandrills. I like beef.
Dudes. Dudes are good.
But you also said, I think you both opened up by saying flying beats trample.
Oh, he was saying...
Is it just the extra power and toughness that you want?
If the flying wasn't in the set...
Oh.
If the flying wasn't in the choice between the three other cards that we've looked at.
Yeah, because of the 4, we're first
Kian
picking
the
flyer. Kian
likes the tap creature spell better, and I like the 4/4 with trample better.
Right, I've got no idea what's going on now.
All right, next card.
It's a red card. Summit Prowler. 2/2 mountain pips. He's a creature. He's a yeti. Oh,
is this just the... 4/3 for 4 in every set.
4/3 for 4 and a shitload of flavor text. And just a hairy dude coming over a mountainside.
Oh, that's right. I just keep calling him Borderland Marauder.
Borderland Minotaur. Borderland Marauder.
Why are we paying two pips for this and still not, you know, making, cutting even with the vanilla test? So, it's like 4 for a 4-3.
Yeah, exactly.
And
like,
nothing else.
And it's just fine. Like, in Theros, I loved Borderland Minotaur. 4-3, it was a Minotaur with exactly the same thing. Because you had a little bit of a Minotaur tribal thing going on. You were generally only two colors, so the two red... It added two red devotion if you needed it as well.
Look, I don't want to aim any spoilers, but we're not going to get a Yeti tribal thing, because there's just one of them.
Yeah, sure. I think so.
Yeah, right.
There might be one in the Tima clan. So they're all kind of elephants and
there's
shit.
There's no advantage. Why have they put two red pips on this?
Just because, like... A 4-mana 4-3, especially in a set with morphs. So you have to remember that a lot of times your opponent on turn 3 is going to play a face-down 2-2. Like, I've played a lot of limited so far. Like, I played 16 rounds of sealed and 2 drafts. So that's basically 20 rounds. It's pretty close.
Right.
And I would say in at least half of them on turn 3, I've played a face-down 2-2. For 3-mana, good old, you know, Grey Ogre. And your opponent does it a lot. So a 4-mana 4-3 just brick walls that.
Yeah.
And one of the things that you'll notice with this set is no morph creature can kill another morph creature outright, as in, like, I don't die, you die, for less than 5-mana.
So if you look at something like Sage Eye Harrier there, the first one that we looked at.
Yeah.
If you attack with it as a face-down 2-2 and they block with their 2-2... Unless you're paying more, 5 or more mana to flip up your morph guy, you're not going to win that fight.
Yeah.
In this case, it would be a 1-5 hitting a 2-2.
Yeah.
So because it only flips up for 4. So this is an interesting thing they did in development to help you. The last time that morph was around, apparently it was a problem that some morphs, when you flip them up, would just immediately crush the other one because they got first strike or whatever.
Yeah,
so now they're being a bit more careful with... making you feel shitty for playing morph
creatures.
You can morph
it at any time, though.
At any
time. It's instant speed.
Yeah.
So there's
it can't be interacted with.
Yeah.
It can't be
So you've got
countered.
You've got a 2-2 creature face down. You attack with him into my face down 2-2, but I have 4-mana untapped.
Yeah.
I flip it, come and destroy your guy, and then come home and have dinner.
No, this
in, is that what happens?
No, so in this case, it would be the 2-2 is assigned to block the 2-2.
Yeah.
You go, oh, I don't want my guy to die. So you flip him up, he becomes a 1-5 before damage happens.
Yeah.
In this case, they'll bounce off each other.
So that's what you're saying, right? And the morph guys are going to just flip and kill the other morph guy.
Yeah, so unless they cost more than 5 mana to flip up.
So if
you pay 5 mana, say in one of the other colors, there's Ifrit Weapon Master. You flip him up for 2 white, blue, red. He's a 4-3 with first strike when he flips up.
So he's immediately
going to kill a morph. But you have to be paying 5 mana or more to be able to outright kill
unless you're
guy.
Playing something like blue or a spell heavy deck, you're probably not going to have that much mana just lying around, right?
So
you probably spent it all in your... when you're going.
Yeah, or your opponent is extremely wary of your 6
of course, open mana
or whatever.
So, Summit Prowler, is he going to go for a ride on the Sage Eye Harrier?
Yeah.
Solid guy. You know, you're going to pick him up probably 6 to 12. You know, like, if you have two, three, four in your deck, you're going to be okay. Like, 4 is maybe pushing it a little bit.
But one of the problems that I was going to say in this set is, in Theros, it was good. A good middle-of-the-road creature for 4 mana, you just want to play a 4-3. In this set, because... your color requirements are between 3 colors.
Yeah.
It might be more difficult for you to hit red on turn 4 than it will be to hit white, blue, red on turn 4 because it's all fixing in your deck.
Or easier, depending on how your draft goes.
Because
there's a lot of fixing.
Like, come to Seven Land Hand for definitive answers like it might be or it might not be.
It depends on how your draft has gone.
Yeah.
Because I've had decks where I'm like, I have 16 sources of red, 16 sources of blue, and like 8 sources of black or whatever. You know, and like just because.
So you would be reliably able to cast this guy. Yeah,
because there's so many double lands and tri lands, and I'm sure we'll cover some because there will be some in the pack.
Well, here we go. We've got a Sultai Banner for 3 colorless mana.
He's Speak
an
of the
artifact.
Devil.
Yeah. This artifact, you can tap it and add a swamp, a forest, or an island to your mana pool, or for. This or for all 3 swamp, forest, island, and tap, you can sacrifice Sultai Banner and draw a card. I suppose that's pretty standard for all the banners, is it?
Yeah, so routine? These are like the clue stones from Dragon's Maze.
Except worse. Because drawing cards is way harder. Like clue stones,
guys.
Yeah, clue stones you always used to be able to go like, I have Boris clue stone. Well, red, white mana, you know, two mana draw a card is way better than three mana draw a card.
Three, it's usually, three is usually the standard sort of cost for drawing a card, isn't it? You might get something else.
Off incidental.
Yeah. You might get something else, but like three different colors and tap for. Mm-hmm.
These are better because they tap for three colors as an artifact. And it's slight, but yeah, like Ian said, it is more difficult to get off the draw a card ability. But also, this set's a lot slower than we've seen in Theros and that sort of thing. The games are going a lot longer, generally, from what I've seen. And so you want something to fix your mana, and then as the game goes later, you drew land when you didn't want it, just pop your banner and get another thing out of it.
Yeah.
Having said that, though, like I have punished people for playing turn 2 banner, because if you just go 2-drop into... turn 3 banner. Because I've definitely just gone 2-drop, 2-2 or whatever into 3-drop Grey Ogre. And I've hit them for 6 before they can do anything.
Yeah, they like spend their third turn playing like
setting up
an artifact like that doesn't do anything. Yeah. And you're just like, okay, I hit you for 6. What are you going to do?
Slap you in the face with this cloth.
Yeah.
So you do need to be careful about these cards. And you never want to play maybe more than one or two. Two only if you're like 5-color madness or whatever.
You could probably play more if you're 5-color madness.
Yeah.
But then you've got to be cutting actual spells from
the deck. It's interesting in the context of this pack we're opening, though, because we've got Sultai Scavenger, Hooting Mandrills, Creeping Chill, and now we've got Sultai Banner.
Yeah, blue, black, green fixing.
You know,
yeah,
it's all.
Damn it, should have opened this pack and sealed.
So where does this go?
Nowhere near first through sixth pick. I'm picking them up super late.
So,
yeah,
super
like,
late. I got one last pick the other day.
So if we ended like up picking pick. Up Sultai Scavenger or Hooting Mandrills and
you
we
want some
with that,
stuff
and then
too.
Eventually Sultai Banner comes around and I go, maybe.
You want like one of these in your colors in a draft. Like, one is even pushing it a little bit. Like,
Every day is not 100% included in every day.
Like, if you're really dry on mana fixing and you see a banner, you're like, all right, I'm going to have to do it.
Exactly. I'd rather have a couple of the tap lands, what are they called?
Refuges,
and just play an 18th land instead of this.
You're right. Okay. Oh, look who it is. It's Alabaster Kieran.
What are you doing in this pack?
I'm still lost on this joke.
Kieran doesn't get this joke. Do you know this card?
No.
It's okay. Three and a white.
Hey.
Sorry.
Don't steal my gig, man.
Sorry.
I haven't drafted yet. I don't know.
Can I tell them one bit about it?
Yeah, go on.
It's creature Kieran.
It's crazy. Yeah. Alabaster Kieran. Three and a white for creature. What sort of creature is it, Aaron?
A Kieran.
Oh, yeah.
He's
screwing up your own joke now.
He's coming for you, Aaron.
So he's 4 mana for a 2/3. He's got flying and vigilance.
Oh, this card's amazing.
This card's really good.
And that sounds good, right?
And it flies over Tracker of Kian.
That it does.
And 3's not a bad body to stick in the way. You know, you have attack for 2, you come back, you're ready to block
blocks all the morph guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they print cards like this to be like, this is some defense against the horde of 2/2s that your opponent's playing. This one's really good. Attacking him for 2, like we said, not heaps of flying defense. It's going to get him for 6 to 8 damage before they can deal with
this
it.
This card, like, when I first saw this card, I was like, so you're telling me that I just get to play a common 4-mana dude with 2 abilities, both of which are fantastic. Like, you know, we had Razor Foot Griffin in M15, and, like, that card was okay, but First Strike and 2/2 was not relevant. If this was that, it would be insane because of
more.
Oh,
yeah, this would have been good in M15.
Razor Foot Griffin wasn't too shabby, I thought.
It was fine.
But, like, this is just... This card is bongers. Like,
For a common, it's
like,
good.
This card is still not very exciting. I'm just kind of geeking out about the fact that 3 mana, 1 white now gets us this effect in Magic.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
Yeah. It's a lot of value, isn't it? There's a lot going on there. And that's still a common card, which is pretty good.
Still common,
For a radioactive deer. Where's this one going
to
drop?
I like this guy similar to...
This is...
Similar to Sultai Scavenger.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
I would be. Because I know why Aaron's going there, because
he loves blue-white.
It's the blue-white thing, isn't it?
Yes.
Correct. He's like, maybe I should be offended. Except you're telling the truth.
Except it's 100% true.
I know that that's true because I was saying before the pod, I started playing Blue White after I was listening to Aaron too much. And I'm getting that vibe off of this card. I'm looking at it going, but this is white and it's flying and it's reasonably good. That's so pretty good. I'm going to choose it over these other ones because I can get the whole Blue White thing happening.
Yeah. It blocks really well. It goes on offense really well. It's just solid all round.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. So we'll put it in there with those. The
actual
Saltire, the
reason that
the
I
Alabaster.
Like it more than the Scavenger because it comes down on four always. Yeah. Whereas Scavenger's not going to come down on four always. And by the time you're attacking with Saltire Scavenger, it's pretty late, and you've already gotten in for four damage with this.
Yeah.
Okay. So say you're hard locked in Abzan, right? Like your first pick was an Abzan rare. Your second pick was the Abzan Tri-Land.
Define Abzan for us, Keelan. We're new to this.
Green, white, black.
Right.
So that's the kind of going long. Yeah.
Long
so
game strategy.
You you've picked up a Tri-Land, a good rare, couple of good Outlast guys. If you're faced with only two good cards for your color in the pack, and you don't really want to switch colors because none of the cards are that exciting, and it's the Alabaster and the Saltire Scavenger, what do you pick?
I don't know. Maybe the Kirin? It really depends.
Okay. We'll have to see. That's really interesting.
Question. Yeah.
All right, we've got a land here.
That's a lot of conditions.
Yeah, there's a lot of conditions in that question.
Damn
But you can imagine him at the bar, talking to a girl, leaning up against the bar. Like, look, if this place was empty and it was just me and you, and this barman here was uglier than me, and I was a lot more handsome, and I had an amazing car parked out the front,
and you were a bit drunk,
and you were more drunk than you are, and I told you that I had an amazing pad I could take you back to, and in the car, wait, hear me out. I've got, what sort of music do you like? You look like a, what sort of music is it? Beyonce, Alanis Morissette,
Taylor Swift.
Car is full of Alanis Morissette. Love that kind of shit. That good quality vibes. What if I told you I have Batman underwear on? Alanis Morissette underwear.
Oh,
I might be a lesbian as well if that's the direction that you're heading. Okay, so with those conditions in mind, do you see yourself going home with me tonight?
No. Give me a bit more. A little bit more information.
Okay. my brother is Brad Pitt. I can
don't like Brad Pitt very much.
No, I don't like. Okay.
He killed Brad Pitt.
Yeah. I can run 100 meters in less than a minute. I think a minute's a good time.
I think someone can run it in under 10 seconds now.
Yeah. I can do double figures of push-ups.
It's a 11 souls. That was enough conditions.
All right.
Your brother's Brad Pitt. You can run 100 meters in under 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Double digits of push-ups.
I was probably telling the truth. So now that if I made all those conditions disappear, since you've already agreed to go home with me, still on?
Yeah, all right. Yeah.
Sweet.
Well done. You can sweet-talk me into it.
That is the best pickup line
ever. That's the Kieran pickup
line. We'll be trying it tonight. Thank you, Dave.
The Kieran method.
The
Alabaster Kieran method. All right.
Show you his Alabaster Kieran. Yeah,
I'll show you my 2-3, if you know what I mean.
Oh, God. It's got flying and vigilance.
Flying and virginity.
It can keep going. Vigilance.
I've got flying virginity. I mean,
vigilance.
Shit.
Oh, no.
It can go on attack and defense at the same time.
Nice. Now you're talking. Woof. All right. Thornwood Falls. It's a land. It's Thornwood Falls enters the battlefield tapped. When Thornwood Falls enters the battlefield, you gain one life.
I'm going to stop you there, Dave.
Right.
Quick quiz, Aaron. What color is it?
Green, blue.
Ah!
There you go. You can tap it and get green or a blue to your mana pool. Thornwood Falls. It says it, doesn't it? Thornwood.
Thornwood.
That's your green.
That's wood. Green.
Falls. Blue.
Island. They weren't very inventive these names of this set. Like, even shit like...
They always do that sort of thing.
They always do it. Yeah. Like, Scalding Tarn. It's Scalding because hot. Tarn, blue. It's water. Done. Misty Rainforest. Mist is blue. Rainforest is green.
Misty Rainforest. I've seen a lot of her movies.
Misty Rainforest.
Misty Rainforest. I wouldn't go near the Scalding Tarn.
Fetchland.
You might get burnt.
My girlfriend's mum's name is Tarn. And when she tells me off, she's a scolding tarn.
Can you sell her for $90 on SCG?
Doesn't listen to the
Probably.
Pod.
Probably. Doesn't listen to the pod, thank God.
All right. So, Thornwood Falls. This is this pack, isn't it?
Look at it. This is going in the middle. I like picking up some fixing for my decks.
Yeah, we've got to throw that away for the first
Something to keep in mind. Enemy colors of these dual lands. So there's 10.
Oh, okay.
There's one in every color combination that you could possibly imagine. The enemy color ones can go in two different clans. So this one in particular goes in red, blue, green, Tima, and it goes in blue, black, green as well, Sultai. Whereas the white, blue land, something like that, the allied colors this is, so white, blue, black, blue, they only go in one clan. So white, blue only goes in white, blue, red. So the enemy color ones are slightly better to pick up earlier than the enemy than the allied color ones.
Man, this is so you have to remember what is going to be the sort of deck which you're most fearful of.
Yeah.
When you get the three colors.
Well, no, just so say out of this pack you took that I don't know the Sultai Scavenger first, the black one.
Yeah.
You know that the Sultai Banner and the Thornwood Falls are both going to be able to fix your mana in a blue-black-green deck.
Yeah.
Whereas if you pick up a white-blue card, that's only going to go in blue-white-red. It doesn't go in any of the other clans. So it's kind of... You have to know a little bit extra information outside of just picking the cards, but...
Yeah.
It's not super important. Obviously, you'll pick them up if you need them, like...
See, scaling that down a bit, does that just mean that... Because we're not going to first pick Thornwood Falls.
No.
So we know we're going to pass that on. Mm-hmm. So does that make us looking at any of the green and blue cards more favorably?
Because it might come back?
Yeah, and like, then we can use it.
It's definitely something to consider. We've got Sultai
banners floating around as well if we get desperate.
We'll talk about some of the draft strategies in a minute, but one of the draft strategies is to... pick all of the mana fixing that you can in four colors, maybe splash a fifth color, and then you can play any card that you open in pack two and three. So that's a draft strategy, and like some people would probably advocate first picking mana fixing in this format.
Right.
There are people who are going to punish you for that, though.
Yeah, as well. Yeah.
There are people that punch him just for all sorts of reasons. All right, Jeskai Windscout.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah,
This is quality common.
Sign me up.
Two and a blue. It's not venturing too far from the nest, is it, this pack?
No.
All right, two and a blue. And you get a 2/1 with flowing.
Flowing.
Flying. I was reading flying and prowess at the same time. He's got flowess. He's flying and he's got prowess. What's prowess then, Aaron?
So prowess is whenever you cast a non-creature spell, this creature gets +1/+1 until end of turn.
Right.
So it's usually on small creatures, pretty okay costed. And this is all Jeskai clan, so blue, white, red. Blue, white, red cards all have prowess. And yeah, you just want some non-creature spells to back up your evasive guys.
Surely you've got a lot of... You're hoping to get a lot of spells as you go along.
Yeah, exactly. And even stuff like...
your crippling chill is going to prowess this guy up for one.
Exactly. Draw a card. Like off crippling chill or play a banner. This guy triggers... If you play a banner, just attack them for three. And a three mana... 2/1
for flying? Oh, yeah. But even a three mana 2/1 with flying...
I play
solid,
this.
Like solid.
Yep,
yeah, definitely. You're going to get in with some. And
something to bear in mind is that the Jeskai colors specifically have a cycle of uncommons that have an effect that if you pay one when you cast a non-creature spell, they do something a bit extra. They're enchantments. Right. They cost 3 mana. Goblin Slide is one of them. Goblin Slide reads, whenever you cast a non-creature spell, you may pay one if you do put a red 1/1 goblin into play.
Right.
So not only
and Quiet Contemplation is another one of them.
Yeah.
As well.
So not only is it a card itself that triggers prowess, but it makes all your other cards that trigger prowess better. Mm-hmm.
So these are going to be the kind of draft around me uncommons that are just going to support the random flying dudes like this. Yeah. You're just going to get in for a lot of damage, I think.
Yeah.
This card, you know, like I could see myself wanting six in a draft deck.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I would play as many as I can possibly get.
Yeah. Like I had three, and every single time.
Because imagine having two out, and then you play Crippling Chill, tap down their flying blocker or their reach guy, and you hit it for six. And they're like, "Cool, I'll play another one." And then you just like draw two cards, attack for three. You drew like another thing. They're attacking.
That sounds like a personal story, Aaron.
Yeah. Well, you can imagine playing two. You've got two of these guys out. Not unreasonable. And you play two spells in turn, you're hitting them for 8 flying damage. It's unbelievable. Yeah, it just adds up.
Really ironically, quickly. I did that to you.
Yeah, he did.
Mm. Okay. All right. Goodbye, Jeskai Windscout. Where's he
going
to go?
He's going to the top of the pile.
Top of the pile.
He's our highest pick so far.
I would first pick it over any of the other cards in this pack, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it like, welcome turns are 2 cost, isn't it?
2 cost, 2/1. Yeah.
It's got a downside.
Gives that prowess.
So for one more, you lose the downside. And it can prowess.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's
I'm pretty happy with that. Yeah.
All right, here we go. Is this our last uncommon? Yes, it is. Last uncommon, Snowhorn Rider. This has got a lot of colors you need. You need three colorless. You need forest, island, and a mountain.
Ooh,
for this creature who's a human warrior. He's a 5/5, so 5 mana all up for... No, 6 mana for a 5/5. He's got trample, and he's also got morph. And his morph cost is 5, 2 colorless, a forest, a blue, an island, and a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And you can turn him up for 3.
So you play him as a 2/2 on your turn 3. Attack with him a couple of times. People don't want to block because they don't know what it is. You play your 5th land drop. They're like, cool, I'll block with my 4/4. That seems pretty safe. You pay 2 blue, red, green, and he flips up and he's a 5/5 trampler. And they're suddenly, oh, shit. Like, you know, that just... It's massive. For the cost you're paying it, he is going to be the biggest thing on the board on turn 5, easily.
Really good example of 5 mana, flips over, kills a morph guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, like, when you're above 5 mana and you flip a morph guy, he's going to kill that morph and survive. Mm-hmm. So these are the cards that you really need to be wary of.
As soon as they hit their 5th land drop, all their morph creatures that are on the board are infinitely more dangerous.
Yeah, and like it makes this set have a really interesting push and pull because you have all this mana untapped for combat almost always when you're attacking with morphs. Is it a combat trick? Is it a morph? You know, like there's so many different options.
That it could be, yeah.
For myself, it's actually making this set seem really exciting because, you know, like...
Remember how we memorized... Because we were preparing for Grand Prix Sydney, we memorized all of the combat tricks that could possibly be represented in M15 Limited. So it wasn't that many because each color's got 3 or 4, maybe.
I think now, it was like 20 all up.
So 20. Yeah, so you got like 5 in some colors, 3 in some other colors, but we're just like, oh, it could be Titanic growth... Or whatever, like +4/+4. It could be this +2/+2 and first strike or whatever. But we memorize them within like the first week because you've just got to, if they're attacking into your guy, you're like, well, he could have this or he could have this or he could have this. And this one is just like, as soon as they hit the 5th land drop, all bets are off. It could be literally anything. And they could even just cast a spell from their hand as well. Yeah. As well as it being any morph creature.
And it gets more dangerous if the more different colored mana that's got as well. Yeah. So,
And like, It's really one of the things I cannot stress enough when you're playing this set. It's really important to take note of what morph creatures they have.
Yeah. So because, game one, you see a morph, you get blown out by it, fucking write it down.
Yeah, I see. Yeah,
write it down, remember it, doesn't matter what, because like if they play that guy again, you need to be able to think, okay, is it this guy? Is it this guy? And, you know, like if they only play one morph guy an entire game, it's probably safe to assume that they only have one or two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like it's really important to think about those little things. And bear in mind, you can write down anything about what your opponent has done. Technically, you can write down every single card that they've played.
Yeah, one of the guys that made top 8 of Grand Prix Sydney, someone played against him game 1. He's like, oh, this guy was like really annoying. He wrote down every single card I played. Then he made the top 8 of the Grand Prix. I think it was it might have been doing something for him to help him out. Yeah,
it's not a bad strategy, is it? Because, you know, you can see what possibly you could have in his hand. It makes a lot of difference to your decisions. Yeah. And yeah, you're right. There's probably not many morph cards you're going to pick up in Limited.
No.
So
you're not going to have 10 in your deck. The most you could potentially have is like 6. Like that's high.
So you write 6 card names down. That'd be
hard.
That's no effort.
One of my drafts, someone had 12.
Yeah.
He got one of the Bill Rami morph uncommons. And like,
And so you write down 12 names.
So write down 12.
Stop taking anything out of your day. All right, Snowhorn Rider. Where do we like him?
Solid, but in the same camp as the Kieran and stuff. It does pigeonhole you into blue, so red, like, green.
Technically better than Jeskai Windscout, but as this is the first pick, we want to stay away from it because 3 colors is a big commitment, and you could very easily just end up not playing it, and then you've wasted your first pick.
Yeah. As opposed to the Wind Scout, which goes in the blue, red, green deck. So you take, if you get one of those Snowhorn Riders 4th pick or something, they're probably not picking blue, red, green cards, and you can maybe move in.
Well, with the gold border and the multiple color of mana there, you're really starting to think Chromanticore.
There's a lot of Chromanticore-esque splashing. I got to tell you about my greedy draft decks, David.
Look forward to that story.
So greedy.
Okay, first uncommon here is Stubborn Denial. That's 1 island for an instant and counter target non-creature spell unless its controller pays 1. And it's got Ferocious. If you control a creature with power 4 or greater, counter that spell instead.
Mm.
How do you feel about this card, Aaron?
I think it only goes in one deck, and that deck is going to have four power creatures galore in it. So every now and then it's going to be a one mana counter spell, but I'm not playing it for its non-ferocious wording. It's just too situational, and it's going to be blank.
Step us through that ferocious thing again. If you control a creature with power four or greater, counter that spell instead.
Yeah. So
what are we countering?
Non-creature spells. So it says counter target non-creature spell unless its controller pays one. Yeah. But if you control a creature with power four or greater, instead you change the whole text of the spell to counter target non-creature spell. So counter that spell instead of it being if they pay one. It's worded a bit weirdly.
Yeah,
but it's pretty much just a... It's going to be a one mana negate later in the game.
But they can still get out of it by paying the one?
Not if you have ferocious.
Right, okay.
So basically the way to think about ferocious is a bunch of their spells do something, and if you have a guy with four or more power, it does something better.
Yeah. Or something in addition to it.
So either something in addition or something just strictly better.
It always seems so hard at the beginning of the block.
And it all just
suddenly goes to jelly and you're fine.
This set is very complicated.
It's much more complex than something like Theros, where everything was like, oh, you bestow a thing onto this creature.
Yeah. I'm going to
do a combat trick on this creature.
I'm going to make my dude big and then big again and then big again. Oh, look, here's my 8/8.
Yeah. The whole of Theros block was like combat tricks and non-creature spells and having a good balance between those. This is one of the clans out of five has that entire kind of play to it.
That still feels more watered down than 10 guilds in the Ravnica block.
Yeah, right? Dragon's Maze was a mess, I think, and they made a few mistakes with that. This, they've condensed the different clan abilities down to pretty simple stuff, so like it's not going to be overwhelming like Dragon's Maze maybe was, but still complex. Mm. Obviously, just coming off M15, everything is going to look complex.
So where we placing Stubborn Denial?
It's sideboard material and only goes in one very niche deck. Okay. What do you think of it? It's too situational, right?
Standard has some very good possibilities. Limited, I don't actually see myself ever casting it.
Probably sideboard it.
If you picked up the Jeskai Wind Scout, which is our number one pick at the moment, then Stubborn Denial's got a little better coming around.
Because you can just trigger Prowess or counter one of their tricks. But again, like they're going to be able to pay one so much of the time.
Count, of course, yeah.
Also, bear in mind there are some 3-power Prowess guys, and Aaron, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you cast a spell with Ferocious on it, Prowess resolves before the spell.
Correct. Yeah.
And then, so if you have a 3-power prowess guy, and you're going to cast this ferocious spell, it actually counts as ferocious, which is pretty interesting.
So you just end up paying one to get your prowess +1/+1.
And then the additional thing happens because it's now a 4-power dude or whatever.
Yeah, it's not going to come up too often, but it's good to know that it will.
So,
yeah.
So if they pay the one to negate your spell, in the case of Stubborn Denial, has the prowess already been triggered or have they negated
So in this case... say I've got Bloodfire.
It's a 3/1 with prowess.
It's a 3/1 with prowess. I don't know all the names 100% yet. He's a 3/1 with prowess. So whenever you cast a non-creature spell, he's going to become a 4/2 till end of turn. They go to kill it with some spell. They've got heaps of mana untapped. You cast Stubborn Denial on that spell.
Yeah.
At the moment, it's just saying counter it unless they pay one.
Yeah.
The prowess on your creature triggers before the spell resolves.
Yeah.
So it becomes a 4/2. Then this spell resolves, checks whether you have a ferocious creature, which you now do, because it's 4/2. Now it just counters the spell instead of them being able to pay one for it. So it goes very well with
bloody
prowess
hell.
In that way. So, but it's like
that's going to be a few judge calls.
Yeah, it's going to be some weird interactions between the two clans. But like, it's
paging Judge Graham.
That's one of those things that puts you above the average limited player when you know random stuff like that and you can trigger prowess exactly when you need to get your ferocious trigger. But like, it's pretty niche.
Tiny stuff like that will actually win you limited games because, you'd normally just look at your hand and be like, man, I'm so dead because you're attacking for lethal or whatever. But because you know that little thing, you win the game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Difference between doing 2 damage, 3 damage.
Exactly.
3 damage or 4 damage. Mm-hmm. All right. The second uncommon is Gurmag Swiftwing. One in a swamp.
Oh, this cut sucks.
Wow, the uncommons.
I can't remember it.
The uncommons are shit.
Yeah,
so far.
Gurmag Swiftwing is one in a swamp for an uncommon 1/2. And this is a.
Oh!
Is a creature.
So bad.
And he's a bat. He's got flying, first strike, and haste.
Yeah, so, you know, Ken, before when you were
saying... That's a lot of abilities for 2 mana.
For a 2-3 flying vigilance, it's got 2 keywords. Whoa, this is 2 mana. It's got 3 keywords. Whoa.
And they're all bad.
It's on a 1-2, though, so shit.
So, this card has a classic case of I don't know-itis.
I don't know-itis.
And why I say that is because in development, I'm like, what are you doing?
He's a bat flying off with the snakes, what he's doing. That's what it is.
I think this card was planted to trigger Raid, which is the black-white-red mechanic. It rewards you for having attacked with a creature this turn. Okay. So if you attack with a creature this turn, deal 2 damage to a creature or something. So this is just going to come down on turn 2, attack every turn. It's going to be a while before they can block it, and you can trigger every Raid spell that you play. But,
and the thing to remember is if this card was a 2-1...
Oh, it ridiculous. Would wreck absolutely
standard.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. Like, it would just.
Card's fantastic. Yeah. But if it's a 2-1.
He's going to destroy Jeskai Windsky if you haven't got nothing to do with it. He's going to knock him out of the sky. Oh,
yeah, but all you have to do is play one prowess thing.
Yeah.
The blowout potential is real.
I feel for the bat.
But it's not. In Theros, this thing would have been insane because you just bestow it up.
That's what I'm thinking. There's not a lot of that sort of ramping.
Not a lot of augmentation.
Rampability.
Not a lot of creature pump in this set.
Right. Oh, boy. Okay, so Gormag, he goes in with the uncommon pile, which we're sideboarding, or is he?
It's just rubbish. I'll never play it.
Okay, I will play it. That's not to say it's any
good. I'm hoping you eat those words, Aaron.
Okay.
If I have 3 Ghostfire Blades in my deck, maybe.
Is this where I make a stand and I go, no, the Swiftwing, he's going to have his day.
He's our pick. No.
Yeah. I'm a huge I'm a Batman fan. I want him to win.
4 foil Gourmet Swiftwings. I will never play
He's more a flying rat than a bat.
That's a bad bet because I have to get foil Gourmet Swiftwings.
All right. Frontier Bivouac is our other
land. How do you say this one, Kian?
Bivouac.
Bivouac.
Bivouac. All right. He's a land. It's a land. Frontier Bivouac enters the battlefield tapped, and then you can tap it and add one of 3 colors, forest, island, or mountain, to your mana pool.
Yep.
So,
sort of mana fixing card in the set.
Yeah. So they've got the full cycle of these are uncommon. They've got one for every clan. They're all really fairly high picks. They're already seeing playing standard. Just rock solid mana fixing. Best mana fixing in the set, I think.
It's actually fairly reasonable to first pick some of these because, you know, like, they
this
all...
This pack has not impressed me so far. Yeah.
They all have what Aaron was talking about earlier is they all have an enemy color pairing. Mm-hmm. So all of the Trilands can act as an enemy color pairing for another guild. And... So
the other day I played blue, black, green, splash, white, but I played Frontier Bivouac in that deck because it made blue and green mana. So I just needed it to add blue and green. Didn't need the red for anything. Still good. Like, I played Guild Gates everyone would play, but Guild Gates.
In one of my drafts, I used the Jeskai Land Mystic Monastery to produce 2 colors, and they were blue and white. Mm-hmm. But one of my cards was Scaldingkin. It's a 4 mana 2/2 flyer, but it has an activated ability that costs red.
Mm-hmm.
And the red ability is sacrifice that deals 2 damage to a creature or player. And that's just how I splashed it. Like, I was just like, you know, I wouldn't normally have played this 4 mana 2/2 flyer, but because I randomly
it's
had this...
It's got random upside. Yeah. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So where do we do that? With the 3 colors? Is it worth picking? Because you got so much variability.
I'm probably first picking this in this pack.
So far, I'm first picking this in this pack. Yeah, right. Just because it leaves you open to 2 different clans. Even if you end up in 5 color, it's going to fix your mana there. And none of the things in this pack are impressive enough to justify first, like, just having the best mana on the table.
Good rare. Come on. All good rare.
We've got a rare.
Oh, God.
Damn.
It is a land. It is Bloodstained Mire.
Ooh.
Tap and pay 1 life. Sacrifice Bloodstained Mire. Search your library for a swamp or mountain card and put it onto the battlefield. Then shuffle your library.
There we go.
Fetchland.
So, jokingly, before the podcast, I said that if there was a fetchland, me and Aaron have to fight for the death for it. So,
I think David just gets it. It's David's pack.
Well, anyway, so what are we doing with Bloodstained Mire?
Bloodstained Mire, if I'm at a Grand Prix, top 8 of the Grand Prix, Frontier Bivouac, the uncommon that makes three different types of mana better than this card.
Yeah, I thought my knee-jerk reaction. I thought that's got to be better, yeah. Right?
Fetch lands are better because of their constructed implications. So, like,
right.
I think LSV said this week that fetch lands are top 1% of Magic cards ever printed because they do so much and ask so little of you. Reshuffling your deck, you know, gaining life from Courser of Kryphix, fixing your mana in Modern and Legacy to get, like, you know, this can get a Swamp Island from your deck or a Swamp Plains from your deck. The fact that these do so much in Constructed doesn't bear any impact on it in Limited, except for its monetary value. So it's like $25 if you pick it up in a pack and you're keeping the res. Obviously, just pick Bloodstained Mind, you go trade it for Planeswalker or some shit. But I mean, top 8 of a Grand Prix, I'm first picking Frontier Bivouac.
Inherently, this card has one super sweet ability when you're drafting. Pick it, sell it, draft again.
Yeah.
So in the draft,
it enables you to win draft games by having another draft tomorrow.
Super sweet.
Ken, first picking?
Frontier Bivouac.
All right, I'm going with Gurmag Swiftwing and sticking to him. Me and him, we're friends.
Going way back.
All right, let's recover and get into topic discussion number one, which is imaginatively titled, isn't it?
Yep.
With no title. All right, welcome back. We're here for draft stories.
Yeah.
Draft with Aaron stories. Graham.
Oh, yeah, Aaron's going to...
Alabaster Kirin.
You're going to kick us off with a Master of Pearl Necklaces story.
So, yes. Well, Master of Pearl is unfortunately not involved. That card is sweet.
Yeah.
That card is so good.
My very first Khans of Tarkir draft, you open the pack and there's just a wealth of options available to you. And I remember very clearly from Shards of Alara draft, which was the last time that we drafted a three-color set. That was like 5 years ago, about when I started drafting. That I remember everyone, I didn't know what they were talking about at the time, people going, fixing is so important. I first pick fixing, second pick fixing. I just play whatever I want every draft because you pick mana fixing early. Everyone else is picking these random shitty things and then passing you res because they can't support them in their colors, but you just have the best fixing on the table so you can just play anything that you get passed. So I drafted...
That sounds like terrible.
I drafted four... It only works in these three color sets. Right. So I opened my first booster pack. I was like, better keep my options open. I think I first picked a Sultai Scavenger, the 3/3 flyer. Passed.
Ironically, so did I in this draft.
Actually.
Yeah.
So I passed along a bunch of three color stuff. I think I passed along blue, white, red Ascendancy. Like, three color enchantments, pretty hard to play. I was like, I don't want to pigeonhole myself into playing three color with my first pick.
Yeah,
just black, keep it open. Immediately get past the blue, black, green tri-land. I was like, ooh, mana fixing. I've heard that mana fixing is really good in these kind of formats. Then after I get past that, get past the Sultai Ascendancy, which is...
Oh, I hated you for that.
Blue, black, green enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, look at the top two cards of your library, put any amount of them in your graveyard, and then the rest back on top in any order. Then you draw your card for the turn, obviously. So I was like, ooh, someone's just passed me the tri-land. They're obviously not in this clan. Then they passed me the Ascendancy. They're obviously not in this clan. Let's just see if I can just force blue, black, green from what I've been passed. So ended up taking a few good removal spells. Got past a Sultai Charm as well. So I had all these sweet blue, black, green cards. Picked up some fixing, picked up like a black-white land and like a blue-green land and that sort of thing. So my mana's looking pretty good already. Pack two, first pick Murderous Cut, which is a delve removal spell, just destroy target creature. Then get past June Blast, which is four white-black-green, choose up to one creature, destroy the rest. And I was like, I can splash this. I can splash this. Because I'm already two of the colors. I'm black, blue, green. So just didn't splash a white,
didn't
one
you
white
say you already,
card.
You'd already got that in the fixing hand.
Yeah, so I picked up a black, white land. So just had to take white fixing a little bit higher. Yeah. Ended up playing one of the slowest control decks I've ever built around how good the mana was, that I could just cast removal spells until I like kill him with some stupid 6/7.
Woolly Loxodon.
It's like,
how are you staying alive early?
Removal spells.
Oh, just cheap
billions
removal.
Of cheap removal spells.
Didn't you have two or three of the two mana enchantment, Nick 2?
Yeah, so I had Singing Bell Strike. I had two of them, which tap is an enchantment. It keeps a creature tapped until they pay six to untap it.
Oh, wow.
Sweetest art ever.
Yeah, it's a guy like karate chopping this orc in the neck.
Well, it's upside down.
Upside down.
forgot that.
So I just had lots of cheap removal, lots of stuff to get me to the late game. Then I'd play that Siltai Ascendancy. So every upkeep, look at the top two cards, put any shit I don't want into my graveyard, which fuels my delve cards. Yeah,
yeah. And you had some mythics as I recall.
What was my mythic?
Didn't you have Hooded Hydra?
Oh, yeah, I had Hooded Hydra, which I picked up in pack three. Mythic Hydra, whatever.
First picked it or something? Not important.
First picked it in pack three, yeah. So pretty lucky. Drafted this grindy control deck and just filtering card draw removal spells until they're like, I'm going to overcommit and just try and attack. And I'm like, June Blast, destroy all creatures apart from my 2/4, and then just kill them with my 2/4. and the mana in this set is so good that you can do random stuff like that. Whereas in Theros M15, you're kind of pigeonholed, and I keep saying pigeonholed, into playing these two color decks, maybe splashing a third color, but it was so difficult for it to work out. It looks like you can draft these deadly control decks and just play whatever sweet things that you manage to get your hands on. So beat a couple of my friends in the first two rounds, and then I played Kian in the final. I'm sure he'll tell you about his deck in a minute. Ripped running lands to kill his unblockable
guy. Did you get a moral
guy.
Victory?
Yeah.
Well done.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but there's nothing better than get to that third pack and you open it up and there's some uber bomb and it's in the colors that you've been drafting. Yeah. You're just like, it's my day.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
And that's what I feel like when you draft this fixing deck pretty much, because you're playing 3 to 5 colors. Any mythic that you open, no matter what it is, you can play it because you've got the fixing available for it.
Okay, I should have prefaced these draft stories by we're doing these draft stories so that you could learn from our mistakes or our fortune.
Because of the sheer power of stuff in my deck, managed to just edge out Kian in the final there. Mm-hmm. It was a very, very tight game.
It was good fun.
So, and is this the same draft that you're going to be talking about?
Yeah.
That's what happened for you, Kian.
So my draft went in a completely different direction, partially because I never actually drafted Shards of Alara.
You were sitting to Aaron's right and kept passing him all his fixing cards.
No. So I had this really interesting draft which kept bouncing between 2-3 color combinations. And like I ended up with 2 or 3 cards inside those colors, but I was never able to commit because the cards just kind of dried up a bit. So what I actually ended up playing was I had a blue-black deck, and I was straight 2 colors. Like there was no splash, there was no nothing.
The 2 colors.
Yeah, right. I just had this very, very aggressive blue-black deck. So I first picked the Sultai Scavenger, 6 mana 3/3. I second picked Lash of the Whip. Throttle.
I was going to say for Lash of the Whip.
Lash of the Whip's
better. Yeah. Throttle, which is the same card as Lash of the Whip, if you're familiar with that one. Yeah. I third picked like Debilitating Injury. Fourth picked a Jeskai Windscout. Fifth picked a Jeskai Windscout.
It's just kind of like evasion and removal. Yeah. Wow, that's good, apparently.
And like at the end of the draft, I ended up with like 11 evasive dudes, 11 flying dudes, 3 unblockable 3/2s with morph, which are insanely powerful, a ghost fireblade, and a bunch of tricks. And like I was like, let's see if this works. And I 2-0'd the draft quite quickly, quite confidently. I got to watch Aaron dirtling against his opponent twice.
It took me like 50 minutes to kill my second round opponent. I was look at the top 2 cards of my deck, put one in my graveyard, go.
I had been watching Aaron's game for about 30 minutes at this point.
Kian like finished in 15 minutes, just like, flyer, prowess, kill you. And I was like,
Kian's thinking, we're going home early tonight.
No, Mr. Graham.
No, Aaron's got something to say about that.
So yeah, I had this really interesting deck with some very, very powerful turns, one of which I'll talk about in a minute. And it had a lot of flexibility, and it started with a plan, it just evolved, and it just hit them really hard.
Yeah.
You know, this is the deck that punishes someone for being, you know, I'm going to play this morph dude, banner. And I was like, you know, I'll morph my dude, attack you for two. And then when they finally did something, I'd flip it over, and it was a 3/2 unblockable, hit you for 3, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was this really interesting deck, and I had a lot of fun with it. personal favorite story from drafting that deck.
I thought we'd already started that.
Oh. In our second game against Aaron, I draw my seven and a bunch of really good cards, but no lands. So I'm like, okay, go on to six, shuffle up, draw six.
Yeah.
Zero lands again. I'm like, okay, oh,
zero
this should be exciting.
Hand.
Yeah.
Slightly less interesting podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mulligan again. And as I'm saying this, as I'm doing this, I say to Aaron, you know, so like I'm mulligan to five. I think I won the first game.
Yeah,
you won. Yeah, I won the first game. And I'm like, I'd actually just be okay with three lands and a morph. I draw my
three lands and
five cards. They are three lands, the morph unblockable dude, and a ghost flyer blade.
Oh, God. So ghost flyer blade has been ridiculous. Every time I've played it or people played it against me, it's one mana for an artifact equipment. Equip creature gets +2/+2, and you can equip it to a creature for three. But if you equip it to a colorless creature, it only costs one. Oh. So you put it on your morph creatures, which are colorless. Then when they flip up, they still have the equipment attached to them. So,
oh, really? It doesn't drop off?
Yeah, it doesn't drop off because the creature is still the same permanent. So my most unpleasant turn was I'm like, comes into play tap land, comes into play tap land, land banner, and Kid hits me for five unblockable damage on the same turn. I'm like, oh my god, what the hell? Because he like morphs his guy, next turn equips the Ghostfire Blade to it, flips it up, it's the 3/2 unblockable, which has +2/+2. I've done nothing, and he's hitting me for five unblockable damage. I'm just like, oh my god, I can't win. Jesus Christ.
Man, that was a good tip right in itself there.
Yeah. Huh?
Yeah.
And ironically, he did beat me after a very, very long game.
I luck sacked the shit out of him.
I heard it was morally he beat you anyway.
it was one of my best games of Magic I've played in a while.
That just kind of, this format looks really great because you can draft a dedicated two-color aggro tempo deck, or you can draft four-color, like, you know, slow-ass control deck.
Well, that was what I was going to ask. Because it seemed like from your stories, it was heading that, you know, we're just looking for three-color decks.
Mm-hmm.
So is that your bog standard? If you're coming in for a draft,
yeah. You're
probably going to be playing a three-color deck.
Most people will end up in three colors because of the absurd power level of a lot of the three-color cards.
So there's a common morph in each clan.
Yeah.
And then there's uncommons, there's rares in those clans. Like, you're going to first pick a lot of these rares because they're so powerful, but they do cost the three different colors.
It feels so scary after, you know, like before we were definitely playing two colors. Mm-hmm. Three, I'll splash for it. But now it's just like, we're doing three.
Yes,
we're
going for three. But there's enough support for it with all the lands, all the tri-lands, all the fetches, all the banners and stuff.
Wizards have really learned in the past couple of years that if they want to do a three-color set, they have to provide the fixing.
Yeah, I've lost the most games of Shards of Alara draft because, you know, you just miss your third color.
Yeah.
Because you just didn't get any tri-lands in the draft or something. And so you just never draw your third color and you just lose with all these three-color cards in your hand.
So do you feel like you should have your mana fixing first before you splash into something else? Or is it just the power of the card that makes you go, wow, I really hope I get someone to fix this?
People are recommending is that, say you're red, blue, green. Yeah. You're mostly green and blue with a little bit of red. So you're like a two-color deck, but your third splash is coming off these good mana fixing cards. So you are playing three color all the time, but it's like you're playing two color with a splash always.
Okay. So we're talking about mana bases. Just run us over what sort of how we're going to get to those mana bases. What sort of fixing have we got? Starting with the fetch lands, we got one of those as our rare in the pack. They're all pretty much the same.
Yeah, all the same.
Tap, pay one life.
There's only allied color ones, which, like I was saying before, the enemy color ones in this set are slightly better because they apply to more color combinations, clan combinations. But fetch lands, not actually the best fixing in the set, like we said in the pick.
They're still okay. Like,
for drafting.
For drafting.
Let's be clear about that, yeah.
Because you can only crack the fetch land one time to get a swamp or a mountain, say, and then you're stuck with that swamp or mountain, whereas all the other ones you can change it.
They're very versatile.
Exactly.
Yeah, depending on what cards you draw on off the top of your deck.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So if we're in drafting, we've got the tricolor lands.
Yeah.
So we're feeling more confident with those.
Much more.
You see those, your eyes light up.
Yeah, exactly.
So we first picked that, right?
Yeah.
Guys did.
Yeah, we did.
I think I went with the bat.
Our pack was fairly boring, though. This was a pack that you're not going to get all the time. A lot of the times, there's going to be a really powerful card that you want to pick up. We just didn't have that. And, you know, that's one of the things that you always want to keep in the back of your mind. You're like, oh, this pack seems a bit mediocre. Is there fixing? And if there is, you probably want to zero in on it because it is going to allow you to play like Aaron. It is going to allow you to play that really powerful game.
Sheer power.
Yeah. Like, you might be...
Tricolor land, then you give your options way open. You're not really shortening it by too much, eh? Because there's like three other colors you could get.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. What else have we got? We've got...
The refuges.
Refuges.
These are called refuges, named after the first time they were printed in Zendikar. They were like Grey Pelt Refuge, Akum Refuge. But because those were all places on Zendikar, they just made a new cycle with different names, but everyone still calls them refuges.
Right.
So the gist of these ones... the gist of these ones is they all tap for two different colors. And then when they come into play tapped, and when they come into play, you gain a life. That's all that they do.
So,
but there's 10 of them.
Playing aggressive decks in like sealed and limited of this format has been very frustrating because the worst case scenario is like your opponent's on like 24, and I'm like, oh my god, what am I doing?
Yeah, they start the game on just higher life because their lands just randomly gain them a life when it comes into play. It's just
It's definitely made things interesting. Like, you know, it's put things, you know,
that's kind of that rates the person you're playing against, though, because, you know, if I think more experienced players would you know, you can be on one life and the other person going 25 and you still think, I'm taking this guy down. But because the life totals are irrelevant until you got zero, right?
It just makes it that much harder for these aggressive decks that are just like, I just need to do 20 points of damage as soon as I can, and then if your opponent starts on 23, you're just like,
It is demoralizing. It's just demoralizing. It feels like it's a lot of work. Yeah. And especially if it's getting, like, you know, your slow play draft, you know, slow play deck, you know, you still got a lot of life to get through. You're thinking, crap.
It's going
to
take you a little bit longer. And so the second draft that I did, I played against Toby G. Venus.
Ah, I've heard about him.
He is so far undefeated.
Is the playground.
The playground. So he's so far undefeated in Kyle's draft because do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to punish all these people like Kian did that are playing these slow five color decks by just drafting like aggressive every single time.
Right.
And I drafted another one of those deadly control decks.
And got crushed.
Yeah, got crushed by him because I like stabilized.
Rightly so.
Stabilized on five life, and he's like, deal five damage to you with this spell. I was like, fuck's sake.
Is that gonna come around as a possible strategy, do you think? Or is it?
Yeah, yes, definitely. It is. You just gotta, like, I imagine, say at the Super Series on Sunday, everyone's drafting these control decks with heaps of fixing, and then someone's just playing like red splash blue, and they're just like, aggressive guy, and they're like, I'm gonna fix my mana.
Oh, so what would be the last way that we can fix our mana bases? It's not just a regular land, is it?
The artifact, the banners.
Yeah. Are there any, how do we feel about them?
Yeah, I like them because I'm playing these slower decks. You can take a turn off to make your mana better, but you don't want them in every deck. And there's only, like, you know, they're at common. You'll be able to pick them up whenever you need them.
You had a bit of a different, stronger opinion than that, Ken.
These cards are...
garbage.
Fucking dreadful.
These cards are going to lose people a lot of games.
Yeah.
And...
just because they're all three colorless, right?
Yeah. You could have played a morph for the same cards.
Yeah, like, they are insanely powerful when your deck needs them. Like, it's going to come down, it's going to fix your mana, cause suddenly you're playing your uber powerful bomb. But a lot of people are going to play them incorrectly. A lot of people are going to be like, I'm in these three colors. I have, you know, four of the Gilgates and two of the Trilands. You know, I'll also play this banner. Well, actually, you didn't need to. Right. You know, and like...
So it's not a three drop. It's not a good three drop card. Is that right? I'm thinking more like later game, just to splash in a color, you might...
Like when I was playing against Toby, the second draft that I did, I didn't end up with enough white sources for quite a few white cards, and so I just played two white based banners, even though I played Mardu banner, which makes red, black, or white, and I only needed the black or the white, so I was playing like a mana rock that only made two different types of mana just because I needed it. But there was just, it was the deck called for it. It's not going to go in 80% of decks, I reckon.
One of the things always good to think about, always good to be aware of, if you've got a banner in your deck and you come up against an aggressive deck, check your sideboard. If you have an off color
lighter in there that you can set fire to your banner.
Like if you just have an off color morph, like you can never flip it up in this matchup, it's probably better than your banner.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Like, that is completely relevant.
So you just got a 2-2 two, two for
yeah,
three.
Yeah. Like, it might be better. I've played 2-2s for three and four minutes without morph.
Yeah, so, like, always be aware that your sideboard is going to have, you know, maybe it's a three-color morph dude that you picked up early and you just can't play. You know, it's okay to pick those up. You know, like, it's okay to be like, oh, this pack's a bit average. There's a morph guide. It's okay to pick that up because it's a legitimate strategy to just play a three-mana 2-2 that you can never flip up. And, as we talked about earlier, if your opponent is even half decent, you're just going to be spinning them around the twist.
Yeah, because like, man, he's never flipped up this guy.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, what is it?
Every land he plays, it could be even more powerful, you know?
And, you know, like, one of the things that I've definitely done in Sealed and Limited already is play my fifth land, attack with my 2-2, which I can't flip, because it has some other crazy mana cost, or, like, I'm just not going to flip it because it's just, like, one of the really bad ones. And they just let it through.
Yeah. Like, nah, I won't block that with my 10-10. Man, no way.
And it's beautiful.
Okay. Well, I think we've got a few Super Series tips coming up. But first, we've got some games to play. Let's jump into a bit of flavor text.
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 Beat the power.
And Dave grabs his crotch.
No, beat the power. There was a bit of
Flavor Flav.
Public Enemy.
Yeah, Public Enemy.
Flavor text. Here we go, guys. You get your pens ready.
Oh, my God. I'm so excited.
Everyone at home, clench.
Is it true I'm undefeated in this game?
Yeah, I think so.
Do we find out the theme before or after?
This is a post-theme one, surely.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Post-theme. Okay. Here we go.
We have Water Shifts and Confuses, but as ice, it holds the stillness of truth. Aril, the Whisperer.
Aril, the Whisperer.
Water Shifts.
Just look at the Buster Booster. It's not in there.
I was like, that sounds like from Tomb of the Wack.
Yeah.
I can guarantee it's not in the Buster Booster. Yeah, I just picked up the cards from Buster and started reading a bit of a giveaway. See if you can remember the last 15 cards that we opened.
Where dragons once flew, their bones now lie. That's like all the fetch land flavor text. It's just like, where dragons now, blah, blah, blah.
Water shifts and confuses, but as ice, it holds the stillness of truth. RL, the Whisperer.
Have no idea. This one is like...
Okay.
Yep, I'm out. Dead.
Oh, see, I'm thinking we're going to have a high-scoring flavor text / MTG card quiz.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Maybe.
Use standard as a baseline, then maybe.
All right. That one, then that one. All right, a bit of admin going on here.
All right.
Mm-hmm. All right. We all want to know what's going on in someone else's head. I simply open it up and look. Flavor text 2.
Oh.
We all want to know what's going on in someone else's head. I simply open it up and look.
I feel like this is Gitaxian Probe, but Gitaxian Probe was printed in New Phyrexia, and it's not Phyrexian enough.
Keen, you should have learned last time. You know, like,
yeah, don't give me the answers. What if I'm just like, oh, that reminds me of another thing.
That reminds me of the card, which is the one that you
which
just
is
said.
The one that you just said.
I'll just write that down. So it's... We all want to know what's going on in someone else's head. I simply open it up and look. I feel like I would go all... I go all Hannibal I read these out.
Aaron, I gotcha.
Yeah. All right. You ready?
Yeah.
Number three. This might sound familiar. Where dragons once prevailed...
High five, Aaron.
Yeah, man.
Their bones now sink.
Oh.
Where dragons once prevailed, their bones now sink.
Yeah.
That one's going to be flavor text number two, but I thought, wait for three. Very good. All right, we got scribbles.
Yeah.
Everyone at home, are you happy with that?
Is there a theme to this one?
Oh, I don't know.
Dragons.
Do you want any repeats on that?
No, I think we're good.
I think I've got one.
I've got two.
Okay, kick it off from the top then. Water shifts and confuses, but as ice, it holds the stillness of truth. Aril, the Whisperer. Aaron, what are you going for?
I have... Crippling chill.
Crippling chill?
Really? What? No. Crippling chill's thing is like way different. It's about like freezing in the middle of winter.
That's what that one is.
Aaron's gone for crippling chill. Don't look.
Crippling chills. In the silence of ice, even dreams become still.
I mean, icy blast. That's my guess.
Ken?
Oh, no.
Blank.
Blank. Oh, well, you know you've not gone one.
Is the answer icy blast?
No, the answer is lens of clarity.
Oh!
It's one colorless artifact. So you may look at the top card of your library and at face down creatures you don't control.
Oh, are these cards from Standard?
This is from Khans. It's from Khans.
Oh, shit. Telepathy is not from Khans.
All right, number two. It's still 0-0. We all want to know what's going on in someone else's head. I simply open it up and look. What do you got, Ken?
Silence. I had telepathy, but it's definitely not telepathy.
Telepathy. All right, what have you got? Aaron, you don't know what the theme is. The theme is going to be mad.
The theme is
craziness. Looking inside people's heads.
So the first answer
was people with earrings.
Lens of clarity.
Yeah.
This one is Rakshasa's secret.
Rakshasa's secret.
I can't remember what that card does.
It's mind rot, but you
stop.
Mill
stop touching
from
my $25 card, Ken.
I've been stroking it gently.
So you got Rakshasa's secret?
It's wrong. I know it's wrong.
It is wrong. The answer is Grim Haruspex.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Which one's that?
Two in a swamp for a creature, human wizard. He's a 3/2 morph. Yeah. When another non-token creature you control dies, draw
that
a card.
Oh, that guy's really cool.
Sweet. He's like a rare, and he's looking inside a bad skull picture with a brain hanging out the top.
I just call him When Stuff Dies, Dude.
No, I really like that guy because he flips up with just one black mana.
Yeah.
Like, he's sweet.
All right, here we go. Yeah, his morph costs cheap.
Okay, to tie it up.
To tie it up. Here we go. Ending with, we might have had a hint for this one, Aaron. Where dragons once prevailed, their bones now sink. What have you got?
Oh, it could be one of the two of them.
Could.
I'm pretty sure I know which one it is.
All right, Aaron.
It's Flooded Strand.
Flooded Strand. And Kian, what are you going for?
You got to go for the other one. Right?
Oh, with my paper as my proof, Polluted Delta.
You've got nothing written.
What
though.
Is it? I don't know. It's either one of those two because it has to be the blue one.
Sink. Swamp.
Yeah, but they can sink. The picture on Flooded Strand is a sunken dragon in a lake.
What do we got?
Polluted Delta.
Oh,
yes!
I had it written down.
Kian starts with an early lead.
I had it written down and everything. I was like, nah, it's Flooded Strand because there's a picture of a fucking sunken dragon on it.
That's in every one.
Oh, God. Jesus Christ.
Kian starts with a 1-0 lead.
No tricks, no sleight of hand, straight up. Khans of Takir.
Jesus Christ.
Flavor text.
Aaron Graham, I'm coming for you.
Everybody talk here, everybody talk there. Jump with the rhythm, jump, jump. Let's see, Music Factory. Yeah. Oh, enough of that. Discussion 2 after this. There's another year coming up next year.
Apparently there's another year coming up.
It's got it's a one more number than what
it's
it is
almost
now.
Like last year.
but it's not, is it? It's going to be completely different.
Yeah.
What's going on, Aaron?
So this is amazing. This is
I'm so excited.
This is the third biggest shake-up to Magic after the introduction of Standard. Right. And
drafting?
Drafting was just whatever.
People
were doing that before they intended for it to be done. So anyway, when they introduced Standard, people were like, I can't play with my Black Lotus in tournaments anymore. They were like, no, only the last 2 years of sets. And then when they changed all of the rules in 6th edition to like remove like damage on the... Oh no, in M10 when they removed damage on the stack and stuff, huge changes. This is, I think, possibly bigger than those. They are changing how Standard rotates, and they're changing how block structures work.
I'm so excited.
So for a very long time...
He just can't hide it.
Magic blocks were made up of a very large set, which would set up the story. Then it'd be
awesome.
And a small set, which was a bit less awesome because they were just working on the things that came in the first one. And then a third small set, which was
terrible.
Which was very bad because they'd already done it in the first set. They'd already done the second set. And then the third set, they were just like,
nothing
so
to add.
This three-block structure that was just ingrained in Magic for like 15 years has come up with such clunkers as Alara Reborn, where they're like, okay, we did a multicolored set. Let's, for the third set, we don't know what to do. Let's just make it all multicolored. They fucked that up.
So how have they solved all this?
So they've solved it by getting rid of the third set.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. But
you just get rid of the thing causing you problems.
Yeah. No, no, but there's another bit to this, which I'm a bit upset about.
So, well, blocks are going to be only made up of two sets now. So, yeah. So instead of it being Khans of Tarkir, Fate Reforged, Dragons of Tarkir, or whatever it's going to be.
Not the third one.
Not the third one. They're going to do two blocks, and they're going to come out exactly the same schedule, and then Standard's going to rotate every third block release. So say how this is it's weird in this particular sense because we're coming off the 3 and into the 2-1.
Yeah.
But in the future it's going to be, let's say, A and B make up block 1. Then C and D are going to make up the other half of Standard.
Yeah.
Then when E comes in...
No, because it's three blocks.
Oh, yeah, sorry. E comes in, adds to Standard. F comes in, adds to Standard. Then when G comes in, it knocks out A and B.
Oh, okay.
So Standard's going to be made up of three blocks of two sets each now.
So this adds a lot less variance to the block sizes because it means that instead of going from 8 sets to 4 sets, because you used to lose the block and the extra core set, Standard will constantly be jumping from 6 sets to 5 sets, 6 sets to 5 sets. So it makes things a lot more consistent.
Yeah. But the problem that David is very worried about, he's shedding a tear over there.
You know where I'm aiming for that, don't you?
They are canning the core set after Magic 2016. So many different opinions here.
Core sets.
The core set was where they could reprint cards that didn't fit in other things. They could put a bevy of planeswalkers in because they didn't need to fit in the story. They were where they introduced new players to drafting and constructed for the first time. Mm. And now I have no idea what they're going to do.
What I love about the core set is that each year it's like, okay, I can chill out and I can just play like a beginner. I can relax a little bit. And I can just take it easy. The cards have all got it written on there. It doesn't overcomplicate. It's like a little Magic holiday.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like so boring.
No, but it's not though, because they've done this thing in the last few years, which is fantastic. If you look at 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th edition, they're all rubbish because they're all just catered to new players, but then people have to play them as a draft format because they come out, and they were not great draft formats. When they rebooted it with M10, they made core sets good for new players, simple enough that they could all grab it, and be good enough in franchise players to draft over and over and over again, 40 to 50 times. So, like, they've been improving it and improving it, and drafting core sets been really good for the last few years. But each time they make a really great, complex draft set that makes all the enfranchised players happy, new players are coming in and being like, Convoke?
Yeah,
what the hell does that mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Bloodthirst, Scry, like, all these complex things.
So, like,
pretty unnecessary for new players.
But I think the thing is that a lot of players haven't grasped yet, and there are a small fraction of players that are still unhappy with this change because of, you know, like Dave said, I think the thing is Wizards has gotten a lot better at this. And what I think this means is that we will now get draft sets that when you draft them are simpler, simple to learn, and hard to master. And that's really exciting to me because think about M13. I know you drafted M13 a lot, Aaron.
Yeah.
That set was hailed as one of the best draft sets of all time. No?
Yeah, it was.
I've never actually drafted it myself.
Yeah.
Now, from what I understand and what everyone's told me, the draft set was insane for new players. Everything was so simple. It was laid out. You know, there was very clean mechanics. It was all really nice to play.
Mm-hmm.
And for pro players and high-level players, there was so much complexity and different options.
So much depth. All the rares were interesting. Nothing was too overpowered.
Yeah.
Exalted played really well in a core set base, but that was lightning in a bottle. Like, all the M14 was notoriously hard for newer players to get hold of in draft.
Yeah.
Anyway, M15 really bomb driven. They're moving away from removal, moving more towards combat. And it just means that these insane creatures at mythic and rare are just like overwhelming games where you should have lost. So M13 was, I think, the best of the best with core set. And if they can't make it good every year, they're going to put the same development into this new block structure.
So how am I going to feel if I'm a new player and I'm walking into my local game store and the second block, as the second set of the block has just been released?
Yeah.
Am I going to be able to sit down and go, great, I can jump into Magic now? Or am I going to feel like I'm behind, I'm going to get hammered, forget about it?
No, it's time for Aaron Graham Premonitions.
Oh, here we go. Premonitions.
About a year and a half ago, Wizards of the Coast filed a trademark for Magic the Gathering Origins.
Ooh.
And this was around the same time that they registered Khans of Tarkir, Fate Reforged, and Dragons of Tarkir.
Mm-hmm.
No, not Fate Reforged, because that's generic enough they didn't need a copyright for it. But Khans of Tarkir, Dragons of Tarkir, Magic the Gathering Origins, all trademarked around the same time when they would have been brewing up this new block structure.
Yeah.
And they've said, with the new block structure, there's no room for the core set. We're going to have another product for new players. I think it's going to be either a booster or a limited set release that comes out every year or so.
So it's going to be like a rolling
core
set.
It's going to be a rolling core set that just kind of comes out. They add to it, kind of like how Commander decks work at the moment. They've got, like, you know, instead of intro packs coming out for every single set, they might not need intro packs for every set because they've got Magic Origins coming out every couple of months.
So you'd jump into Origins and then you'd step up to the big league.
Exactly. Yeah. So when the next big block comes out, you jump off the Origins cart and onto the Magic the Gathering block train.
Which is good because it keeps everyone happy then, because I don't play, I think, so the difference is, Kian, you're playing a few times a week. I jump in and out, I'll play seriously for a few months and then I'll stop and I'll be doing something else.
I think that's more normal than
I like to be able to step back into it in an easy way where you want the complexity of it because you're taking it up a level every week.
Yeah, so I actually think Aaron's idea is really good, and I hadn't even thought about it in that light.
Mm-mm.
But I think there's a completely different possibility. So the other possibility is that...
premonitions.
I feel like yours was better.
I did that on purpose.
Yeah.
I feel like the other possibility is that they just make drafting better. So they just focus on making better drafting environments all the time that are easier to understand.
But, like, new players don't always just want to draft, though. They want to just be able to pick up products and open a booster and just add it to their snake deck. And when they open a pack of Khans of Tarkir, it's like morph and like blue, red, green mana cost, and they're like, this doesn't go in my snake deck. Like, you know, they've got to have something that you can just open, and they're like, it's a Hydra, I'm going to put it in my Hydra deck.
Damn right, because there's two sides of that. There's, not wanting to get ripped off, not wanting to open a pack and take the wrong card and pass something really good.
Yeah.
And you'll remember that it's burnt into your head. Yeah. And someone's, you don't want to be that. It's like 6 months down the track, someone could be like, he was the guy that passed me this. And you're never going to beat that.
But imagine a conspiracy-esque booster release called Origins. It's not designed for enfranchised players, and it's all one-color cards, nothing too ridiculous, over the top, maybe even like seven-card boosters or something. Just a simple way to introduce people to draft without them being overwhelmed by the complexity of these expert level expansions. I think that would work really well.
And how for them. Sorry, the other half of what I was going to say before was, and the other thing is, like, I remember this time there was a mate of mine. He's got this massive slot car set under his house, and he's got these. He's about 10 years older than me, and he's got all his mates the same age. They've been doing slot cars forever, right? Yeah. And I was at his house one day, and he showed it to me. And showed this setup.
It's like Skeletrics and stuff, right?
Yeah. And I was going, man, these cars look amazing. He goes, you should come down on Friday. And, you know, we're racing them. I'm like, oh, I'll come down and have a crack.
Yeah.
So, you know, I come down with zero skills. And there's these guys that have been doing it for 20-odd years. Yeah. They're just, you know, altering the cars. They won't tell you how to do it.
Yeah.
And they're just going a million miles an hour. You've got some crappy shitty piece of Fisher-Price scale electrics car.
That you stuck a little electric rod to.
Yeah, you have to go and jump start it every couple of hours. Yeah. And you just go, there's no way I'm catching up to these. And after a few other guys, after a few weeks, I just bailed. I was just like, no, I'm out.
Because how can you learn that kind of hobby?
Because no one was helping me get up to speed with them, because they didn't want me to beat them eventually. So I would hate that to happen to Magic.
Yeah, so there's this... Like, I am worried that people are alienated by the complexity of a thing. So if a new player comes in and I'm just like, we're doing drafts all day, you want to do a draft? They're like, yeah, I got some time to kill. Mm. There is no way to just introduce someone to draft on a Tuesday or whatever, when there's people like trying to win packs and win rare picks in the store, that it's not like a really conducive learning environment for them to come and sit down and learn how to draft. They're just going to get crushed by everyone. Not everyone is super nice and helps them rebuild the draft deck, you know?
Yeah. I would like to say, though, that the idea that drafting is simple is still so wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah, of course.
Drafting inherently is one of the most complicated things you can do in
Magic. Yeah,
you've
got to play, like, two different games. You've got to play the actual game of Magic, and then you've got to play this other game of drafting the cards.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I don't even think drafting the court sets is simple. Like,
no, it's not.
Most of the simple drafts are exceedingly complicated for any number of different reasons. So I think, like, drafting itself just has this problem, which I feel like, you know, getting new players into is really hard. You know, I brought one of my friends along for a draft, and, you know, I walked him through it, I helped him, and he was still like, oh, this is so complicated, and he never came back.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, it's fun to be at the level and do it and be engaged with it, mm-hmm. but you don't want to be getting your ass handed to you every week,
no,
either.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
you
no way to learn.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... I mean, that's kind of the whole block structure from a limited standpoint, but it has really exciting implications on standard
as
well.
Oh, yeah. So we were stuck with Return to Ravnica block for 2 years. Return to Ravnica came out, Sphinx of Revelation, Detention Sphere, Supreme Verdict, Pack Rat, Desecration Demon, well, Desecration Demon and Pack Rat, not so good until a bit later.
Yeah.
In particular, those blue-white cards, the blue-white control decks looked exactly the same for 2 years.
Yeah.
Because they had this core from... Jace Architect of Thought was in there as well. So all of the decks just had this base of four cards. 16 cards in every blue-white control deck looked exactly the same for 2 years. That's ridiculous. Like, in a game where there's now millions of players and all of them are working to, like... break standard, you got to have the best deck in standard. You got to have a little more variety in it. And I think this new block structure is going to do just enough to. So it's going to rotate
everyone
every
just heaps. You know, everyone was playing white blue or mono black, weren't they? I think in the end. Mm-hmm. So that
was the same again for about 18 months.
Yeah. All right. So just to finish off, we got the Super Series coming up at Good Games this Sunday.
This Sunday, yeah.
So
October the 5th.
Yeah, we're running out of spots for people. This is a qualifier, Super Series qualifier. So this one's going to be a sealed event?
Yeah, this is
right?
Our first big official Cards of Tarkir sealed event after the pre-releases.
So couple of red-hot tips, guys, to help someone... qualify?
Yeah, should we alternate them?
Since both of you guys are going to be trying to qualify at this one as well, aren't
you? Yeah, we are. I think me and Keen are like top of the points of people that haven't qualified yet so far.
Because
I've top-aided the top eight.
There we go.
Yeah,
I've top-aided every single one except for one where I came ninth.
Yeah, I've top-aided two of them, and two of them my brother.
I'm waiting for my right moment where I come in with zero experience
and
qualify.
Didn't that happen? Like, wasn't one of the winners of one of the Super Series this guy who hadn't played for, like, 2 years?
Yeah, Hayden Smith came in, and
he crushed me in the draft.
Yeah, a journey into Nick's pre-release. He was like, I'm not sure this game's for me anymore, man. I'm only going to come in every now and then. Came in, like, M15 draft and just rolled everyone. Like, it was ridiculous.
All right, so quick tips.
Quick tips. Khans of Tarkir sealed. Fixing, very important. Everyone has powerful cards in their sealed pool, so play the powerful cards that have the mana to support them.
Play the powerful cards that have the mana to support them.
So you've got powerful cards of every clan, but you've only got fixing for blue, red, green. Play blue, red, green over the other ones. Even if you've got Sorin or whatever, if you don't have the fixing to be able to support playing your Sorin, play the blue, red, green deck that's slightly less powerful, but it has better mana.
Right. Yeah. Ken?
Write down your opponent's morphs. That's my tip. We've said it before, and it will just pay off so, so incredibly much for you. It'll give you flexibility in what you can see your opponent doing, and it just makes your life a whole lot better. Also, if you can, try and remember...
This is tip three.
No, because it ties into morphs.
This is tied in, I guess.
All right.
Try and remember what your morphs are without looking at them. Because people who are picking up their morphs every 5 seconds...
Yeah.
You give away tells about what they are.
Sure.
Yeah. It's very subtle. It's very hard to pick up, but I've been able to get reads on a lot of people because every 5 seconds they're picking up their morph creature and reading
it. Counting their mana in front of them.
Yeah, exactly. Just
grouping
put it down,
them together,
put it down, and you should be able to remember what it is. You know, it's hard, but you can do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Aaron, tip three.
Oh, I was thinking about his one. Oh, shit. I lost my train of thought. Let's say...
Don't play the bat.
Don't play the bat.
We're looking at we've got mana fixing to worry about. We've got
Can I go for tip number three?
Oh god damn, yeah, go Ken. Yeah.
Oh wow, Aaron's out of tips. I think already Ken's gonna qualify. Aaron, do you wanna write this one down?
Yeah,
this
I'll write it down.
Yep. What do you got, Ken? Number three. I think Ken's already done number
sideboarding,
three. Number
sideboarding in this format is really important.
That's such a good one.
There's a lot of cards that just randomly hose other cards for different reasons. You'll see them when you see the cards. But basically, shut up.
What the hell does that mean? You'll see them when you see the cards.
So this leads back into, writing down what their morph cards are. And you can also write down their bombs and important cards and stuff.
Yeah.
At the end of the game, look through your sideboard. Like, even...
Sure.
Because your sideboard's
which cards in your sideboard, even if there were a shitty card for your first pack that you played, might totally dominate that bomb that they've got or miss out with the answer.
They've got some Ghostfire Blade that's attaching to every morph creature, and Singing Bell Strike tapping down your guys as an enchantment, or some Ascendancy just did a huge number on you.
Naturalize
is not a shit card in this set, even though it's not artifact and enchantment based. Naturalize still got a lot of targets in this set, sideboarding important.
Right, maybe they're beating you with Flyers, Windstorm. Another good example, there's a card that actually has an additional really good effect if their creatures have a 1/1 counter on them.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, that was tip four, I believe, because you did two and three, and now four. Aaron, have you got tip five, or should we go back to Kian for another tip?
I got one now.
Yeah, go on. What would you
do? Do I have to do two in a row, though?
No, you don't have to do two.
No, it's okay. Tip number four.
Or five.
Five.
Five? Oh, goodness. Evasion. Very, very, very important in this set. A lot of the games, the Abzan clans built around Outlast, so they're just gumming up the board with Death Touch creatures, huge blocking walls until they'll kill you with something that they draw off the top. So there's a lot of strategies in this draft format that tend to it being slow, and there being board stalls and lots of defensive creatures out. If you are the only one with an evasive creature that they can't deal with, if you're the last person with an evasive creature, you win the game.
Yeah.
So Abzan Falconer, very important for jumping your creatures with +1/+1 counters. Sultai Scavenger, Jeskai Wind Scout, the 3/2 unblockable monk guy.
To see a lot of board states where there's a lot of cards just staring at each other
just
off.
Just staring at each other.
Happening.
And if you have something to push through that board stall, I got stuck in this game in the pre-release. We were both playing black, white, green. I was splashing red for Crater's Claws, which is one of the best bits of reach in the format. It deals X damage to a creature or player. I had to use it up to kill one of his evasive guys early. Game one and two just stalled like crazy. One of us ripped an evasive guy and just went over the top. Don't be afraid to look in your sideboard for stuff to break stalls like that, because especially in sealed, you're going to get stuck in these groggy board states where you're just like, oh man, attack for 1 damage around your guy, attack for 2 damage here and there, and then they just gain some life, and it's just like you're both stuck at about 20. And then I've just got like 30 power of guys in play, but I can't attack with any of them because he's got death touch, he's got blockers, whatever. Something I didn't even look at in my sideboard was Ferocious. Creatures can't block this turn. On a red card off my splash, could have done it easily because the game went to like turn 25. If I just played that, he would have just lost on the spot every single time. So look for stuff to break board stalls.
Cool. Kian, have you got any more?
Final tip, I think.
Yeah.
Sure. Don't be afraid to kill morphs. So morphs,
when they're a 2/2.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they can be, a 0/6 or a 1/1 death toucher or, a 2/2 or a 5/2.
Destroy
target creature.
Or they
can be a mythic.
See you later. Yeah.
Yeah. Or they can be a mythic Hydra that just makes snakes. Or they can be, a guy that when turned face up, every tapped creature gets returned to its owner's hand. Of the morphs, Master of the Pearls, when it flips up, your entire team gets +2/+2. That effect is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to just use your -2/-2 debilitating injury and just kill it. Don't be afraid to just trade your morph, which isn't great, with their morph. Because some people are just going to try and attack because people are very attached to their morphs. Don't be afraid to just trade. You will get their bomb. You will get their important card. And when it's just a random 3/3 or whatever, don't feel bad about it.
That's fine.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Because there will be times, and I guarantee it'll happen to me, and I'll do it to someone, where I just block them off, guy, and they're like, oh man, really? And it was their bomb.
Yeah. Okay. Kian did exactly the same thing to me. Yeah. He put debilitating injury on my morph guy because he's like, I'll just get that out of the way. I was like, oh, that was my mythic Hydra, man. Like, yeah. I thought you would kill it.
Oh, you will see it when it goes in the graveyard.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, final tip.
Oh, my goodness.
This is really important.
This one's important because you could get disqualified.
How can you read his... Okay, go. Okay.
So this is a rules thing. It will be said on the day, but I cannot stress it clearly enough.
Yeah.
With morph, at the end of every game, if you have morphed a creature, you have to turn it face up.
Oh, okay.
You have to. And because the Super Series is an Ariel event...
Competitive Ariel.
Competitive Ariel event, it's instant... disqualification.
No,
instant game loss.
It's a game loss, yeah.
Yeah, which, like, in a best of three is huge.
Even if it is revealed to be a morph, imagine you're trying to get away with a basic forest. You're like, I just need a 2-2, I'll just play this thing, like, pretend it's a morph.
That makes sense.
So if you're caught cheating, you will be disqualified. Like, if you did it on purpose, clearly, you'll be investigated. But if it is removed to any zone from the battlefield... So whether that's going to the graveyard, whether being exiled, even returned to your hand, you have to show it to them.
Sure.
And the other flip side of that...
Is this another tip?
No, this isn't a tip. But if your opponent plays a morph creature and before flipping it up, shuffles it back into their deck,
bust them.
Call a judge.
Oh my God, like, be that guy.
You might be like, oh man, I don't want to be a snark, but you know this is how we play the game. You know, the game has rules for a reason, so follow them. If your opponent is breaking the rules, and they will be warned on the day... That's fishy. And anything fishy, let a judge know.
Yeah.
You know, when in doubt, call a judge. A lot of newer players are like, oh, I don't want to call a judge. I don't want to be that guy. Yeah. Calling a judge is a totally normal thing. I've definitely done it like 10 times in a game.
Yeah. All right, cool. I just thought of a quick game. You got to be quick, though, all right?
Because
we're going super long.
All right.
We're going to name our favorite... This is from Khanza Takir.
Yeah.
Favorite mythic rare, uncommon, and common each. We'll go mythic rare, Aaron.
Sarkhan, the Dragon Speaker.
Sarkhan. What are you going for?
Narset, the Enlightened.
Rare.
My favorite rare in the set is Juneblast.
Juneblast. Ken?
I don't know the name of it, but it's a 3-4 flyer for 4 that puts 1-1 counters on other dudes for 4 mana and gets +1/+1.
High Sentinels of Arashin.
There we go. I'm not writing that down. Shit. Uncommon, Aaron.
My favorite uncommon in the set is Abzan Charm.
Damn it.
Oh, the charm. Yeah,
can my answer be the same?
Sure, can.
Sure.
Abzan charm. And finally, commons.
My favorite common in. I can't choose that.
You can't.
No, all right. My favorite common in the set is. Oh, no, I'm thinking of all uncommons. Shit.
I'll give you some time to think.
Kian, you go.
Arrowstorm.
Okay, I'll look into that. You got one now, Aaron?
No.
Yeah.
It's Abzan
Guide.
Abzan Guide.
It's a morph. When it flips up, it's a 4/4 with lifelink. It's bitching. So good.
All right, that's cool. I think anyone coming in the Super Series on the weekend's got a few things to look out for.
Yeah.
Get excited about. Mm-hmm. All right, MTG Card Quiz after this. MTG Card Quiz 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah.
That was great. That was the most musical thing I've done all day.
That was bluesy.
Yeah, I liked it. It's a bit sharp, a bit flat in some places.
Me tonight. Yeah.
Oh my God.
All right, MTG card, MTG card quiz.
So, Kian's 1-0 up, huh?
He's 1-0 up.
Yeah, buddy.
You are listening to the Rampaging Beaver Network. So, it's about time we honor our mascot with MTG card quiz on badgers.
Oh my God.
Really?
or as we like to call them,
beavers.
Goodges.
Goodges.
What? When has that been a thing?
Since I just said it, Ken.
Not every badger is a badger.
Yeah, it's a badger. All right.
I'm out.
Score check. Aaron, 0.
What?
Ken, 1.
Yeah.
All right.
Why was I cocky saying I was undefeated at the start of this?
Yeah, buddy.
Question number 1, MTG card quiz. So hard to say without going to the 6-7-8-9-10. But anyway, there have been 4 different standard release badger cards appearing in 5 different sets. Name the sets. There have been 4 different standard release badger cards, and they've appeared in 5 different sets.
So you're saying in standard as of before Khans or now with Khans?
Oh, I don't know what I'm saying.
There's no badgers in Khans, buddy.
Don't give it away.
Oh, fuck.
Well, look, you're 1 light now that you don't have. You can guess 5 sets, Kian, if you're super worried.
God.
So we're after 5 sets. Each set had a badger in it. Okay, so 5 sets. Amazing. There's one that we know we're all very fond of. That's the Gimme. Just thinking of him now. His little furry, eager face.
So angry.
Running, so angry. Running through the water, splashing his little paws.
We've made the rampaging beaver joke so many times, I don't... Oh, I remember what it's called.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like...
Rampaging sorry, Beaver Network. Oh, what was the real name of that card now? I still got to make the Rampaging Beaver table. I found all... I've got like a massive stack of charging badges.
Oh, sweet.
I'm just... Before I glue them to a table, I'm really hoping that, you know, they become worth a fortune. Yeah, like, set $5 each. It's like, great.
Yes.
The house is paid off. Yeah. All right. Question number two. Which is the only badger that doesn't need green mana to cast it? Oh, there's man. One badger in the history of the world, in the history of the universe, I believe, that doesn't require green mana to cast it. Who's that? Badger. I don't really thought you'd have studied up on your badgers.
Yeah, I thought I figure I would have looked this up at some point.
I was going tricky now because I thought after the Khans of Tarkir, you know, you've been staring at them all week. I think on the last set, at least you, Aaron, said I've been reading all of the flavor text on this new set, just in case.
Yeah.
And then so I thought, right, I'm going to do you this time. I'm going to fucking do Khans of Tarkir.
Yeah.
Right.
So all right. Rough.
So, name a badger that doesn't need green mana to cast it. Question three. This one's ridiculous. Even I believe this one's ridiculous. But it's a stab in the dark kind of question. Heather Hudson. We know who that is, don't we?
The artist.
Yeah. She is an artist, yeah. Heather Hudson has illustrated two of the badger cards.
No way. I don't know any of these.
I'm so screwed.
What were these cards? Well, you got a deficit of one to come back from. So Heather Hudson has illustrated two of these badger cards. What were the names of these cards? I can imagine that there's going to be one badger card that's going to be answer for everything.
So I can only remember two badgers, so I definitely just wrote both of them down.
Okay.
You know two badgers. I don't know any. I know one badger.
Yes. But you know the name of every card I've made. This is going to hurt you bad. I know.
It's going to hurt me badger.
Your sterling reputation is on the line.
There's 5 points to be gained in the first question.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And all you got to do is just throw out set names.
Mm-hmm.
Look, so you're writing.
Yep.
Now you guys write down. You go, oh, fuck yeah, I could just cheat.
I can just guess.
I can just guess. Yeah.
Just trying to pick a set at random.
Okay. Well, here we go then. Aaron, do you want me to give me a list of five sets? There have been four different standard release badger cards appearing in five different sets. Name the sets. What do we got?
We've got...
Yep.
Onslaught.
Legions.
Scourge.
All right.
Born of the Gods.
Are you out of your mind?
And
what's your fifth one?
Homolands.
Homolands. Right, that's Aaron's answers. What have you got, Kian?
That's so wrong.
Born of the Gods.
You guys are off the hook crazy. We love Born of the Gods answer. Yep.
Magic 13.
M13. Yeah.
Return to Ravnica.
It's the badger Return to Ravnica.
Shards of Alara.
Shards.
And Morning Tide.
Alara and Morning Tide.
I was like, let's pick random sets.
Yeah, I went for random old sets.
All right, look. Let's calm everybody down. There was a badger in Born of the Gods.
Oh, my God. I've got a point.
So that's a point each.
Goodness. Doesn't that just not count as a point?
No.
Okay.
What do you mean? He's besmirching the rampaging beaver.
Besmirching it.
Okay. Let's go through Aaron's. Onslaught. There was no badger in Onslaught.
God damn
it. Legions. No badger in Legions.
No.
Scourge. There was no badger in Scourge.
Yes.
Homelands. There was a badger in Scourge.
No.
Yes.
No, Aaron.
I'll tell you who it was in a minute because...
It might be another one.
Yeah, it could maybe. Yeah. Okay. Kian. Yeah, you've already got your Born of the Gods. M13. It's a ridiculous answer. Return to Ravnica. That's a ridiculous answer as well.
No.
Shards of Alara.
Nah.
Oh, come on.
There were only rhino people there. No badger people.
Morning Tide. Badgers don't want to hang out in the Morning Tide.
No. No.
The deficit has been made up.
Aaron's on two. Kieran's on two.
You guessed that so hard.
Of course I guessed it.
Why would I know this random fact?
And there was also a... I thought you would have maybe known this.
Can you tell us the five correct answers now?
I can in a minute. There was another one that was released as a media promo as well, which I'll let you know.
Oh, I don't know that one. Yeah. I've never heard of it.
Okay. Question two. Which is the only badger that doesn't need green mana to cast it? Kian.
Charging badger.
Oh, Charging badger. It's a very green card. But maybe it was one colourless. Who knows?
Maybe it was one colourless. Man.
Maybe it was.
Aaron. Okay. I have logic to this one. Okay.
Right, watch out.
Hydras.
Yeah.
Quinn's essentially green, right?
Right. One of the heads, a badger. 24 snake heads and a badger head. Watch out.
Oh, my God.
That's the one that gets you.
Don't badgers eat snakes? I'm sure they can. Oh, that's mongoose.
Yeah. Beaver hydra.
Before
Nimble
hydras...
Beaver
mongoose. Before hydras were green, in Alpha, there was a red hydra called Rock Hydra, and you could pay to put heads on it by paying red mana or some shit. So I've gone with the classic red badger, rock badger.
Rock badger's correct.
Bullshit.
It's rock badger.
You're not.
Aaron goes to three.
What? Oh my God. Rock badger appeared in Mercadian Masks and 10th edition.
Holy shit. Oh my God. Oh. I am... Yeah. Oh, my. I can't actually believe that.
So just to backtrack to question one, that takes care of two of the sets.
Can I ask like what stats it was?
Is it red?
I have to look at it. It is red, yeah. I think it was like four and a mountain for a 3/2 or something.
Oh,
and it had
God.
Mountain walk.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it
Rock
wasn't
badger.
It wasn't great.
My God. That's funny.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh, my twisted logic. Yeah.
If only the B-52s would record Rock Badger instead of Rock Lobster.
Rock Badger.
I might not have hated them so much. All right. Heather Hudson. Woof. She's a looker too. If
you
need to
look her up.
Hold on. It's a beast, not a badger.
No, they've routed it.
Oh.
Anyway.
Yeah. It's a badger beast.
Three. Heather Hudson has illustrated two of the badger cards. What were these cards? Aaron, what are we going
to go for?
Yeah.
Honey Badger.
Honey Badger.
And?
Let me see your Honey Badger.
Charging Badger. Just to hedge my bets because I know that's definitely a badger.
Badger. Okay, now the scores are 3 to Aaron, 2 to Kian, which I can't stop calling Kieran now.
Kieran.
I had problems with your surname. Now I'm screwed.
I just really want to Photoshop that alabaster Kieran. It's like a floating deer. Just have Kian's face on it.
Hey, when he's player of the month next month, yeah. Bingo, that's what's going to happen.
Oh. All right. 100% do that.
Okay, all right, you've got to see his honey badger and his charging badger. What are you going for?
Charging badger.
Charging badger.
And rampaging badger.
And what, that's your two answers?
Yes, rampaging badger.
Right. Rampaging badger for the win.
Charging badger, rampaging badger.
That'll
get you.
The answer, there was, let me see how I can do this. Okay, so there was a 10th edition Rock Badger.
Mm-hmm.
Heather Not Hudson Page did that one. You could have guessed Rock Badger because
oh,
we just
damn
said
it.
That was another badger.
I thought you would have had different answers for each one, so I thought
there was only four different badgers.
There's only four.
The big clue in the first question was there have been four different standard release badger cards.
Oh, okay.
Whoa. And the other one was from Homelands, and it was Rhizorian Badger. So
what?
You both scored nothing for that, which means that reigning champion Aaron continues to hold the trophy.
That logic,
oh
man. That logic.
I'll say, so to back up to question one, we had Born of the Gods had Charging Badger. 8th edition had Giant Badger.
Giant Badger, that's generic.
Mercadian Masks had Rock Badger. 10th edition had Rock Badger. And Homelands had Rhizorian Badger. And the Giant Badger was released as a media promo. It looks a pretty old one as well. It was like he was sitting in a cloud of stars and
that's weird.
Twirling a blanket
Giant
around as a slide. Yeah, that was bizarre.
Oh my God.
There we go, Aaron.
I'm so good at this game. Holy shit.
Smoking.
By the skin of your teeth.
Rock Badger.
So you actually invented the name Rock Badger.
Yeah. It sounded good.
Yeah, it does.
But
it sounds
like.
You know what it sounds like? The correct answer. Yes! It sounds like victory.
So good.
All right.
I thought Honey Badger would have been one.
Yeah, should have been.
Because that sounds like a magic card. But giant, I should have just gone for the generic giant spider, giant thing.
Shit, yeah.
There's possibly. Giant spider, giant mantis, giant thing. Now there's giant badger.
Enough logic. We're going along.
Giant badger's really
let's get
good.
Back with some neats and twos. Neats and twos. Well played.
Thanks.
Wow, back with neats and twos. This is where you guys get in touch with us guys and we talk about what you guys have been talking about.
And then we talk that's kind about of, it.
Yeah, we talk
and
about,
we talk about like, what you talk about.
And this
about.
Is how you get yourself a Hyper Magic Nerd Badge yeah, by no. getting involved with the show. More on that later.
I haven't taken mine off since I received mine.
Yeah, you're I just pinned mine directly into my chest.
Kian actually put his through his nipple ring, so it replaces his nipple ring and he just wears it everywhere, even in the shower. It's getting rusty.
He's actually got two. The other one's Prince Albert style.
Oh, God. What the...
All right.
Mental imagery, I did not want
to... Moving right along, we've got a regular contributor to the show
yeah,
now. So I've decided to step this up and give him his own segment within the Neats and Twos. And it's going to be called Axel's Philosophy Corner. All right, so listen up. He's posted... Axel's got in contact with us this week. And his usual
this
sort
is the
of,
sex with an octopus guy, right?
Yeah. So listen up, Kian. Stop texting. This is philosophy, man. You can't just do this on the fly. All right, you got it. He said, here he is. He goes, I've got a question for the podcast, although it's kind of shitty, so forget my rubbish brain. I'm
You're
glad
forgiven, Axel.
He's forgiven. Thanks for getting involved.
You were never needed of forgiveness.
Right. If we haven't already covered it, I think the theme of today's podcast has been romance.
Yeah, I would say so. Aaron, if I had to pick one word to describe it, it would be romance. Yeah.
I'm swooning towards you.
Okay.
Alabaster Kian.
If you inadvertently fell in love with someone who turned out to be related to you, would you continue the relationship or end it? And if you're the only one who knows, would you tell them and see what happens or keep it quiet and continue the relationship? Man, that's deep.
That's rough. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So, okay, so...
Well, Kian, I think Kian's got personal experience in this, so...
Yeah. We talked about like Kian's dad's 1991 release or something like for about 20 minutes last episode. So.
Yeah, that wasn't good. That was a low light.
I remember that.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Well, all right. Kian's dad released in 1993.
So you're going out with someone. You've fallen in love with them, and then you're happily down at Hungry Jack's. You're eating a burger together. You're looking on your phone. You're looking up birth records and stuff. And you go, "Hang on a minute! I just realised something. This person's related to me."
Okay, what degree of related to you are they?
This is very important.
Yeah.
Oh, I would say close enough to be uncomfortable.
Okay,
first cousin.
At least first cousin. That's
I would
fine.
Like to
if
say. I would like to say. Sister.
And neither of you know.
Somehow you don't know.
You were both adopted as children because your parents died in a fire.
Sure. And, yeah. So Hollywood style.
And your dad became the emperor of the universe sort of thing and wore lots of black. And you went and lived on Alderaan and grew up as a princess.
Uh-huh, yep. Mm-hmm.
The other way around.
Yeah, the other way around.
The other way around. And all of a sudden, you're hanging out with this princess.
And
let's call her.
She fucking kisses you in the mouth.
Yeah, woo-hoo. Kisses you in the mouth.
In
She's
the mouth.
So hot.
Her lips actually go inside your mouth and kiss you
Have
on the inner cheek.
Have you seen what she looks like nowadays?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, goodness. Well, poor Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, she had a lot of stuff going on for
her. Oh, yeah.
Anyway, if sister, no.
You are Luke Skywalker.
Cousin?
Do you bang Princess Leia? Do you Leia? That whole thing.
Yeah,
especially when Han Solo's coming in, you know?
Okay,
he's coming
okay. If you, yeah,
is
if,
she
if
wearing
she kisses
the
you
slave
over Harrison Ford in the 70s, I will just go for it.
You would what?
If she picks me over Harrison Ford, Ben.
Yeah.
If she was in her stupid robe thing, no. But if she started in a slave bikini, sign me up.
Slave Leia outfit. Do you think Jabba the Hutt had his way with her?
Look at that tail. Look at that's a phallic symbol.
That tail. It's really interesting. I think if it was a cousin and you just didn't know and you'd never met him. If you met him, there's way less of a problem.
You've fallen in love with him. He's your cousin. You fall in love. That's in the rules.
The reason that it's so taboo is because it's biologically you're more likely to have not good children, right?
Oh, if you're gay and you're not going to have children anyway,
gay,
fuck it.
Done, whatever, brother, whatever.
Yeah. Okay, so if it's a gay love affair,
yes.
Thumbs up. If it's Princess Leia and she's in the slave outfit, thumbs up.
Yep. But anyone else that in a heterosexual relationship, probably break it off.
So first... cousin past there I'd be okay
right
but isn't there a saying or like something that in theory you're like third cousins with the entire world or something.
I've never heard that.
Yeah, like there's only so many degrees of separation between you and
Will Smith.
Okay.
It was him in that movie, wasn't it?
I think this is pounds.
No. 7 degrees of separation.
I don't know.
Talk amongst yourself. I'll be right back after googling.
So, and if I was the only one who knew, I would probably tell them because it is a two-person. You know, love is a two-way street.
It's I'd have to make sure they're okay with it.
Yeah.
However,
if they were just weirdly okay with it, and you're like, I was expecting you to not be okay with it.
Aaron, if you say you're like 25, right?
I'm 23.
Okay, whatever. Say you're like 25. You think this girl
is... I just told you I was
23. You meet this girl. Sure. You know, you think she's really hot. You know, you fall in love with her.
Sure.
Turns out that she is the daughter of your father's new wife.
The daughter.
Whoa, daughter of your father's new wife. Perfectly
so you're
fine.
Not
perfectly
biologically
fine.
Related.
Perfectly fine. You'd get over the taboos and stuff if you're if you're actually in love with her. Obviously, there'll be a lot of complications, but man, it's rough, and it depends how well you get on with your dad's new wife. If you even see your dad, if you never see your dad and his new wife, that's just a stranger, pretty much.
I feel like we're tiptoeing to better advice than we've given in the entire podcast.
Yeah, definitely.
Hey, good news. Will Smith was in 6 degrees of separation. 7 degrees of separation doesn't exist.
Was the sequel 7 pounds?
The
movie that he was in?
Yeah. But we believe in the theory of sevens around here. So, okay. What else have we got?
I got some face-to-face feedback from you. I think you know.
Has he been? He spoke to him face to face.
Yeah,
did he have the axe out?
Yeah, he did have the axe out.
Oh man,
the axe is. Good times. He told me the origin of the nickname.
Yeah,
the meat axe, because that's who we're talking about.
Yeah, the meat axe.
And I forgot what it
What's
was.
What's that crazy bastard been up to?
Well, he came into the store. He's been coming into the store on Mondays.
Yeah,
because he's had Mondays. He's not studying currently. He's been just hanging out with me while
he's
been
giving
the
finger to the man. Probably, but he's probably got a job. I'd imagine. I see him as a guy who works 7 days a week.
Monday,
he rings up the boss and goes, "Fuck you."
Yeah, every week. Every Monday. Just got so much respect for him. Just lets him get away with it.
The boss goes, what? And he'll go, on the meat axe. What are you going to do?
You're right.
Yeah.
I can never stay angry at that face.
See you Tuesday.
Yeah. See you tomorrow. Anyway, I was cleaning up after the pre-release. He came and hung out with me.
Cleaning up after the pre-release. How many times has that happened, Aaron?
With the meat axe every day.
Hey.
And he said, listen to the last podcast.
Yeah.
You guys were talking about the Jeskai clan. And this got swept under the rug, and none of us noticed it. But Kian just randomly blurted out, Aaron, your mum's in the Jeskai clan. My mum's Chinese.
Yeah.
Not every Chinese person is in the ninja clan. Buddy, ninjas are Japanese.
Yeah.
My mum's Chinese. That's racist.
Oh.
So Kian, inadvertent racism, just went completely under the radar last podcast. Only the meat axe can see.
Thanks for calling us on that, meat axe. So,
we'll have to go back and listen to it.
What's your answer to that, Kian?
No comment.
Oh, my God.
No comment on what?
I decline to answer.
What's that swastika on your arm?
What's that new shirt? Is that a windmill? What is that?
Doctor Who?
It's a swastika.
It's not. He's taking it to another level. It's not white power. It's alabaster power.
It's more socially correct.
Yeah, it glows a bit more.
Alabaster power.
Yeah.
So I would like to... say one comment while not commenting.
Are you going to be gone?
Off the record.
Offer the hand of...
Off the record.
On this permanent record.
To all of our Chinese friends.
I called your mother a ninja, and you objected. How dare you, Aaron?
How dare I? How dare I, indeed?
If your mum is a ninja, that's awesome.
She's standing right behind you, Ken.
Oh, my God.
And that sound you just hear is me dying.
I think she's gone now.
Okay, good.
Store Garrick
competition.
Yeah, Store Garrick competition. This one's getting closer and closer and closer by... I mean, we've probably only got three-ish...
three-ish
extras.
Episodes, yeah,
something like that. And we'll be doing a pizza and beer show in Good Games. I think they're letting us have the key.
Yeah.
They're letting us spread out.
Lock it up.
Put
some pizza and beer on the tables.
Yeah, closed party. We're going to do a live show, and we're going to draw the Garrick comp.
Store Garrick, yeah.
There'll be a question coming out in the next few months, probably in November-ish, I'd imagine. Mm-hmm. All you got to do is listen to the show. Remember everything that we say.
I feel like we could almost have a store-driven you know, MTG card quiz and flavor text, and whoever gets the highest score put in the bucket.
Clearly
twice.
Too much admin.
Clearly me. Just win Stork Garrick.
No, the Stork Garrick's going to be home with a listener. So, and there's one down at Rockingham store as well. Yeah. We've got our dirty, grubby hands on. So, keep listening in and get ready for the question. And if not, you can't remember everything we say. Just wait for the question, then backtrack and see which ridiculous comment it's going to be. Mm-hmm. But Stork Garrick, he's like 9 foot tall.
Yeah.
Just think of it.
Keep you warm.
You can be in Garrick's wake all the time.
Oh, God.
Fantastic.
We already discussed that in Garrick's wake means his farts on the Austin Mangler episode.
That's right. Fine.
Super Series Qualifier number 5 is now online at sevenlandhand.com. Footage recorded by
Toby G. Venus.
Toby G.
This is TGV. The Playground.
TGV and The Playground.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's worth watching. It's a very quick one, this last one, isn't it?
It was.
Paul Jackson versus...
Apparently when he put a Grand Prix winner into the Super Series qualifier, he wins it.
Don't give the result away.
What? No, that was just speculative.
Oh, speculative. Okay. So that's qualifier number 5. But hey, what's happening this Sunday? October 5th?
This Sunday, October the 5th, Khans of Tarkir. Super Series qualifier sealed. Number 6.
You've got your tips?
Yeah, I got my tips out.
You got your tips out. You've for heard the boys. Tips. You got your tips from earlier on in the show, so you know what you're looking for.
Oh God, Kim was getting his tits out. Oh, tits.
I heard the Seven Land Hand Hyper Magic Nerd Badge clanging.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was worried it was the Prince Albert one. So keep your comments coming in. You can get one of those badges. We're happy to mail them out to anywhere. One of them went out to Axel. He's a million miles away. I believe it's down in Busselton.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I posted it. So I hope he lives in Busselton. No, it's gone.
Oh,
I hope he lives in Busselton because I sent it there. All right, well, next fortnight, in an attempt to get even sexier than we already are, I believe.
Oh, buddy.
Who have we got dropping in with us next fortnight?
We have Madison Jones coming in.
Oh, my God. That sounds like a girl.
That sounds like
we're
a
girl. We're getting a gamer girl coming
getting
in.
Getting a
here.
Girl gamer coming into the store.
How will she feel? It's probably a good job that I got all the wanking jokes out in the. it's probably not going to watch
you had
next
a pre-release?
Month. What are we going to do for? What are we going to do for material next week? Month,
just
fortnight.
Oh, just really classy.
Just
not sex
quality.
Related.
Go.
Now
she
enjoys a good knob joke as much as the next.
Well,
person.
Okay. If you're listening, Maddie, bring in your knob jokes.
I don't think she's listening.
She's not listening.
She doesn't play magic.
Well, she's. Oh, she just listens to the other podcast.
Yeah.
Right. That's good. Because we're down to Matt. Matt's.
We replaced Matt with a Matty.
Yeah. And then there's other things as well. Can you believe this? That's the board game Seven Land Hand.
Yeah.
Then we'll be back with Kian for a magic one. And then after that.
Yeah.
Another gamer girl.
Yeah, I know.
Unbelievable.
We got it jam-packed.
Jam-packed. We're gonna have to change our whole. Have to change our whole act, aren't we?
Oh, no, it's terrible.
No knob gags, no acting like fools, just really sensible.
I'm looking forward to it. It'll be a nice change.
Ooh, that's really
how many
taking
episodes
the wind
have we done now? This has been like 30?
400. No, it's like 20-something.
Oh, yeah, almost 30.
Hey, it's got to be come up to a year, isn't it?
Yeah, almost a year now.
If we have passed our year anniversary.
So 26.
We're going to celebrate
26 will be our 1 year... one, if we've been doing them every 2 weeks or so.
Yeah.
Episode 26.
Well,
maybe 25 should be our big one.
Yeah.
Unless we've already passed
the Pier
it.
And Beetzer one. What did I say?
Pier and Beetzer.
Pier and Beetzer. It's like I'm already getting ready for it. Oh, well, enough of this shite. I think I said at the beginning, more of the usual shit, and I think we've covered that, haven't we?
We have covered the usual shit
we've covered
sufficiently.
The usual shit. All right, let's blob and get out of here with an outro.
Thanks very much to Dr. David, as always, a fantastic episode. This
Thank
one's pretty jam-packed with good stuff.
Tips and Buster Boosters.
Yeah, and Alabaster Kieran.
Thank you
very much for coming in. That's Kieran, by the way.
I'll also, be bringing my alabasterness all day.
We'll be polishing up his alabaster.
Good. Yeah, we're going to draft cards a little bit more.
Tomorrow.
And now we'll throw to Kieran for the outro.
MTG card quiz. I'm out.
No, Kim, we're outro point.
Oh.
What is
this
outro?
I tell you what, did I talk about that thing where there was the ugly naked guy in the gym the other week?
Yeah, that's where the racist thing came from.
Yeah, okay.
I've never listened to the end of the show.
I've got. He's never listened to the end of the show. Such a plug.
I always quit it. Like the last
I've got
minutes.
Like it's what I like to refer to as sonars now, which is what does the S stand for? Maybe
Secret.
Stupid
old
naked. Australian racists.
Wow, yeah. Sonar.
Yeah, yeah. And I think last, you know, I was talking about it, and there was, I'd gone into the gym, and there was that guy that was telling the story about how he, like,
you know, Asians, Chinese people, still can't trust them.
Trust them, and the other guy was like, "Yeah, man, we're on a board with that," or whatever. Yeah. Well, the follow up to this,
oh my
brilliant.
God.
I walked in the gym change room, got my bag over. I look up, it's the naked, wrinkly old guy.
Sonars.
Yeah, the sonars are there. I was just one of the sonars was there. He was naked, of course, because that's his natural state. And so I'm.
You mean a naked badger?
I'm instantly angry and depressed because I'm staring at a naked old guy, and I think my locker was on the same corridor as him. So I'm like, ugh, man, I've got to go near him as well now. This is just really uncomfortable. And then I joyed up. Glee flooded into me as I panned out, and I saw that all the way around him were at least, I don't know if I counted four or five Asian dudes. All getting changed.
He must have been really
And then I zoned down in his face, and I was going, "You're having the time of your life, racist motherfucker."
Oh my God.
So that's what I like to refer to as a nobservation. Yeah, because you can
nobservations.
See. Nobservations. It's twofold.
You could observe his knob.
And he is
a knob.
See how that works?
Nobservations. Yeah. I so like if you, it. If you we'll, still... have to we'll have to bring them up in the future.
Yeah, or listeners could write in with nobservations of their own.
Hashtag nobservation.
Oh, yeah. Send us a tweet and hashtag
nobservation. If someone actually sends a tweet with a hashtag nobservation, I'll give you some money.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, me too. Yeah. All right. See you later.
Bye.